Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 Plus 2 made me realize that my knowledge of Pro Skater 1 was significantly stronger than Pro Skater 2. I thought I was adept at all four, but have realized it steadily declined along the first floor. But I did play them and thoroughly enjoyed Pro Skater 1 Plus 2, so I look forward to playing 3 Plus 4, revisiting what I do remember, and also establishing memory that may have been vague or lost in the 24 and 23 years since. It's almost time to grind the grind all over again. Now it's time for your hosts, Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki, to tell you more about this future release and the rest of the week's gaming news. Starting right now in the show, where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet, and welcome back to another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. It is Orange Lounge Radio, and we are back live tonight after a little pre-planned break. Tonight, March 9th, 2025, episode number 1037 of our show. We've been gone for a couple weeks. Sorry, y'all. I needed a vacation, but we're back and here to do another week of our show where we talk about video games, gaming culture, and the gamer lifestyle. I am Rob Roberts. Say hello as well to Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
Sup?
Hey, how are you doing?
I've been slowly losing my voice, but it's that time of year.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I managed to make it through last year without having my really bad bout of laryngitis that I get. And, well, it's kind of wanting to do its thing now, and meh.
That's no fun. I hope a little bit of warm tea or whatever it is you use to push through is helpful to you.
But fuck it, I'm guzzling coffee.
There you go. Oh, man, that sounds good right now. I should have got some coffee.
It's super chocolate.
I have been finding all of these weird, wacky, wild flavors of coffee lately. And I got to tell you, I never thought I would enjoy banana split flavored coffee, but it's S tier.
That sounds bizarre.
It is so good. Like, but I really like banana flavor, okay? Like, you know how, like, banana Laffy Taffy is, like, some of the world's most divisive candy?
I can't Laffy Taffy.
Oh, okay. What else is banana? Banana Runts?
I know, though, that, like, the fake banana flavor is actually based off of a semi-extinct breed of banana.
Yeah.
And that's why it tastes so different than I think the modern one is Cavendish.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah. No, that would make sense because, like, banana runts don't really taste like banana. That's one maybe I can think of that's not, like, chewy. It's a, yeah. But
banana milk doesn't taste like modern banana.
Yeah. But yeah.
And I love freaking banana milk.
But earlier today, I had mint ice cream coffee too. I mean, that was just really.
Okay, that sounds really good.
That's just really coffee with mint. Like, it's like, and maybe like a little bit of like the chocolate flavor they put in it. But it was good. I love my coffee. Looking in chat, Small Shay in chat starts us off tonight saying coffee talk. That's right. I'm your host, Linda Richmond.
Oh, you know, Shay likes coffee. No, Shay is about the coffee.
Banana split flavor. Neither banana nor split. Discuss.
Nor split. Discuss. Anyway. I do have to say, though, that I have gotten, I found Almond Roca Torani, sugar-free.
Oh, yeah. And no, I love my sugar-free Torani. Oh,
dude, I go to TJ Maxx just to get Torani and my Keurig coffee.
I was going to say, those types of, like, the big box discount stores, like, because TJ Maxx, Home Goods, there's another one I would put in the same, Marshalls.
Those places.
Those all are great.
Home Goods and Marshalls are all the same.
Yeah.
Company.
But they all carry that, like, sugar-free Torani or other kinds of syrup. Like, you know, one time I found
Do they have buttered popcorn Torani?
I found the Bethany Frankel brand Skinny Girl or whatever it's called, like, Torani from one of the Real Housewives. I can't believe it was at the Discount Mart, but it was.
But they have those all the time, but I do get this one Italian brand, I don't remember, but I have lavender syrup to put in lemonade.
Just, you know, because tangents happen on this show, and especially after being gone for
cocktail.
3 weeks, I want to address real quick this whole, like, sugar-free coffee thing, because obviously I try to keep as much as I can sugar-free for reasons I've discussed on the show before. This is why Starbucks really kind of ticks me off. Like, sure, I'll enjoy a Starbucks, like, if I have to, but the problem is they have one sugar-free flavor, vanilla. They don't have anything else sugar-free anymore.
Wait, where?
At Starbucks, but
they have hazelnut.
Nope, not sure. They used to years ago. They used to have hazelnut,
they
cinnamon
had
dolce.
A couple of weeks ago,
pre-pandemic, I'll have to bring it up in the app. But I swear, I've only been able to find sugar-free vanilla. But you go to Dutch Brothers, And they use Tirani because they just use Tirani brand syrup. So they have every sugar-free and sugar-filled, but they have every...
They use Tirani and Da Vinci.
I can get sugar-free coconut and I can get it with sugar-free chocolate syrup. It's great. I love it.
But I'm right now, though, I'm being really wary of the companies I go to because if I find that they've canceled their DEI, then I'm trying to make it a very, very active point not to use their services. Although the hard thing has been trying to disengage myself from the Googleverse.
Yeah.
Because like all of my emails, that especially one that I've had for longer than some people in chat have been alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah.
It's
hard when it's happening everywhere, but I understand the whole like making an informed choice. I don't like what I'm doing to be called boycotting. I like it to be called making an informed choice. That's kind of where I'm at with it. So because
well, it seems though to be hitting a lot of these companies that they are feeling strain from it now.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think with a lot of other stuff going on where everything's generally more expensive, I think people are just being more choosy on what they're buying. So, you know, it is what it is. Mm. Anyway, I don't mean to make him sit there quietly. Of course, I want to introduce the one and only Techmaster Loki. Hi, Loki.
Hi.
Welcome back. How was your break?
Yeah, it was all right.
I saw you were...
I stay busy.
I know. I was going to say, I saw you were busy producing Minecraft videos because I saw you had a new one go up that was like your season kickoff. So yeah, so I saw that. I think I literally wrote a comment that was like supportive comment.
It was supportive comment. Yes, it was.
Because I didn't know what else to say, and I was like, "Well, I just want the algorithm. That's all I'm doing. I do this for the algorithm." That's all. So, but yeah, congrats on getting another video done. I hope it's being well received and all that good stuff. I see behind you tonight, because we do tape live, of course, every Sunday night, except the past couple weeks, at the Voice Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VOG Network. We tape Sunday nights at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern, right after the Bobby Blackwell show. And you can watch us do our thing live. We don't save the videos anymore. You can watch them for up to 2 weeks. We actually haven't been saving them for some time. I'm going to be honest, because I saw the utilization, and at most, maybe one person was going in the archive occasionally and looking at an old video. Bobby's been much better about archiving his old videos. But guess what, y'all? Twitch said our hard drives are full. And to the like 0.5% of Twitch users, of which VOG Network was very much one of, that have too much video in their archives, we're going to start auto-deleting. I think my personal channel has this problem too. But they say we're going to start auto-deleting stuff over 100 hours. So unfortunately, not our choice, but Twitch will now no longer allow you to watch the show beyond 2 weeks on video.
I've been going back in and trying to download all my old VODs, but I use them lately for doing video content that we will be talking about, the place I'm trying to upload this stuff to later.
Yes, because, and I will say this is also weighing on my mind, because I have given a second thought because of all of this to maybe we should put all the video on YouTube, and then we'll talk about something later where I'm like, nothing works on this fucking internet anymore. Nothing works on the internet. AI is ruining everything. I hate it. Anyway, let's see. Bobby Blackwolf says there are some landmark OLR episodes that I did not delete, but episode 1000 was never archived to Twitch. I still have the recording of it somewhere, I'm pretty sure. So I have the intro, if nothing else. I'm pretty sure I have episode 1000 somewhere. So anyway, let's see. But yes, the podcast sans video is up on YouTube. We've been doing that for a while, ever since Google Podcast or whatever they were calling that, ever since that kind of faded to black. It kind of merged in with YouTube. And so our audio shows go to YouTube. So there is that. Yeah. And Mike Def says, you know, the video would be pretty great to have. Well, the whole fact that we can't really offer that to Twitch subscribers anymore has me thinking about it, but, you know, more thinking to come. Anyway, what I really wanted to ask was, Loki, you have video that plays behind you as we broadcast live, and you have the Game Boy Classic Super Mario Land, which I have randomly been thinking about lately too. What made you say I want to revisit Super Mario Land?
Because I don't think I've put it behind me before, and because tomorrow is Mario Day.
Oh, of course, derp! It's March 10th tomorrow. That's right, Mario Day. Okay, that works. Super Mario Land was kind of an underrated game in some ways. I mean, It was condensed because of the fact it was on the Game Boy, but it brought some different things to the series that I kind of like. And the music was great. Mm-hmm. So it's great. Love it. Anyway. All right. Let's get into our kickoff topic tonight. And since we have been out for a couple weeks, so I went on a cruise. I haven't really made that a secret. I went on the Star Trek cruise for the fourth time, which is basically like a normal cruise. It's a normal cruise line. It's Royal Caribbean, but it's a charter cruise. So it's nothing but Star Trek fans that are on the boat. And most importantly, no kids, because they suspend all the kid entertainment services for the week because the Star Trek production company or whatever.
That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. It's for people cruising, getting away for a week. Outstanding. So we had a good time. We went to Cozumel, we went to Costa Maya, we did an excursion where we had an open bar in Costa Maya. It was a beach, and it had one of those swimming pools where you could actually swim up to the bar, and that bartender, so I went with Arya Snark, or Victoria from Shaking and Crying, and I know you know who this is. I went with Victoria, and her buddy Siobhan from Rocky Horror in the Bay Area, so her and I go way back too. So the three of us were in that swim up pool, and you know, these are they are attractive ladies, right, that were, you know, kind of, you know, being nice, talk to the bartender, and that, when I tell you, that bartender brought the heavy pour, because we were thinking, oh, open bar, it's gonna be some weak ass Kool-Aid drinks. Nope. Y'all, I got fucked up in Mexico. That was my Star Trek cruise experience, and that was most likely the day I contracted COVID as well. So, you know, so yeah, unfortunately, on the way back at the airport, no, it wasn't even on the airport, it was when the sinus pressure changes when the plane goes up and down, I was like, I don't feel so good, Mr. Stark. And yeah, by the time I got home, I was like, I need to test. And it was like, womp, womp, stupid. But it's just, it's annoying because I just had COVID in October. And then because I couldn't get the vaccine, or I just had COVID in September after Dragon Con, because it was too soon in October to get the vax, I was like, well, I'll get the vaccine 2 weeks before I go on the cruise. So I got the vaccine 2 weeks before I went on the cruise. Didn't matter. LOL, new strain. And it's just, it's annoying. I mean, of course, I know it's part of the risk and all that stuff. But when I tell you all the lovely mental refreshment being in the tropics during this time of year and being with these people on this cruise that I really adore and meeting a lot of new like sci-fi nerds. And it's really similar to like my con family. It has a very similar overlap. In fact, there are people at the Star Trek cruise that I then see at Dragon Con later in the year. It's just so good. So it's a bummer that it had the ending that it had, but yay drugs. I got Paxlovid, it cleared it right up. So, but it's just, yeah, the whole thing's annoying otherwise. Anyway, all right. I don't know what else to say about the Star Trek cruise. One of these days I will convince Captain Matt to do a new Star Trek show, which I think would be a great thing. I mean, unfortunately, Starboard Power Coupling can never come back because we lost Lieutenant Commander Eddie. So it would not be right to ever bring that show back. In my opinion, I guess ultimately it's Matt's choice, but in my opinion, it's not right to bring that show back in any form without Eddie. But maybe some type of like new Trek show, I would love to see. And I would love to see Victoria, because she went on this cruise and she had never seen Trek, any of it. But she was like, I heard it's a good crowd. She had a great time. I don't think you need to know Trek to have a good time. You know, again, but she's a big cosplayer. So she dressed up every single theme night. She did her research. She's like, oh, Ryza party. Okay. What's that all about? She did her research, and her and Siobhan had these lovely tropical homemade gowns from the main stage of RuPaul's Drag Race that looked phenomenal. They got their picture taken. Their picture in their Ryza outfits was up on the main screen the next day. So, you know, yeah, she's great at the cosplay game. So she had a good time. Let's see. Small Shay in the chat says, I'm not aware of the Trek stuff, but should I consider getting into it? I do need more things to watch. I enjoy it because I enjoy the hopeful vision of the future, you know, for the most part. Like, obviously there's villains and antagonists and not everything is pretty, but I enjoy the vision of humanity coming together under a common goal that Star Trek provides. And yeah, Tiger Call on chat says you might like Lower Decks. You'd be surprised. I would also strongly recommend Lower Decks as a really good entry point into Star Trek because yeah, it is
very silly.
It's completely unserious. And it's not like the it's basically Futurama in the Trek universe. Let's be real. And so there might be a couple things that might go over your head a little bit, but for the most part, you'll be able to watch it and completely understand. It is so well written and so well done that I think Lower Decks is a great entry point. I like the new Trek stuff. Some people feel strongly about like Discovery, Discovery's biggest issue was that it was really like five really long movies and not really like a serial show like most people enjoyed with Star Trek. Strange New Worlds is more like that, which is, also pretty decent. The only bad thing they've put out is Section 31. That's the only bad thing they've put out. Otherwise, most of the new Trek's pretty good.
To this day, nothing is as good as Deep Space Nine for me.
You know, in Deep Space Nine, they've been talking a lot about how Deep Space Nine had quite the renaissance because of our streaming culture and specifically the pandemic and people binge watching things. And my understanding is that Deep Space Nine is such a different watch when you binge it than it was in the 90s when most of us watched it. Just because of the nature of you don't have to keep waiting for what the next part is. There's documentaries that have been done on this shit. It's pretty wild. So, Deep Space Nine, it's good.
I go back and watch certain investment. Episodes, though.
Yeah,
there
of course.
Are just some episodes of that that are so... And the thing I like about Deep Space Nine is that it kind of steps a little bit away from the Roddenberry utopia where everyone's happy because we all have everything.
Yeah.
And it shows what happens if you're living in a utopian society and you take away the things that make it a utopia.
Yeah. Pop culture.
It was a lot more realistic to me anyway. Sorry.
Pop culture in chat says Voyager is getting some love now too. Finally. Yeah. This particular cruise was a 30th anniversary of Voyager celebration. So everybody from Voyager except Beltran was there, which was cool. And Beltran's kind of a loon now, so it's fine that he didn't come. So everybody else, this is the first time that Robert Duncan McNeil actually came to the cruise. That was a big deal. Tom Paris finally showed up, and it was great.
Nice.
Yeah, so the Voyager stuff was incredible. And I will say this. So the cruise entertainment, so instead of like Broadway plays or, you know, music events, it's all Trek-themed shit, right? So which is still, and again, you don't have to watch Trek to understand it. It might be like the guy that plays Neelix and the hologram doctor sing songs by the Rat Pack. Or last year when
I love Robert Picardo, though. He's great.
Last year when he was behind us on our flight out there, if you can believe it. Yeah, him and his wife were behind us, if you can believe it. Because we paid for the extra legroom. We weren't first class. We were an extra legroom, and he was right behind us. I guess the cruise production will only pony up the money for that for him. So, but he's great. But they'll sing like songs from Rat Pack. I will say last year, Anthony Rapp, who's in Discovery, right? And he's very well known from Broadway and Rent and all that. He did an hour-long cabaret last year, which was fucking phenomenal. He wasn't there this year. Wilson Cruz was. I feel like we get one or the other from the Discovery gay couple every year, but never both. But Kate Mulgrew on the last night just did a 1 hour, I'm going to hold the mic and talk some shit. Like that was it. And it was everything. My liberal auntie got up on stage and she had some shit to say. And it was amazing. I loved it. She's fearless. And of course she took some questions from the audience and somebody asked, can you tell us? Huh?
Did you do any Dragon Age
stuff? No, it was Star Trek.
She's my Flemeth.
The only Orange is the New Black came up once. That's the only other thing that came up. Not even Miss Columbo or anything. But she was asked, can you clarify the rumors? I don't know if you're allowed to talk about it, but can you tell us where does the Janeway show stand? And her answer in the beautiful Kate Mulgrew way, I can't even do an impersonation. I wish I could. She's like, well, nobody can tell me what I can and can't say. So sure, we can talk about the Janeway series. And she is basically like, what do you all think? Do you think we should do the Janeway series? She's like, I've not really wanted to do it because she said, I just don't know if there's a reason right now. There's got to be a reason for it. You know, it's not just nostalgia. There's got to be a reason to bring back Janeway. And she's like, but do you think maybe in the way the world is right now, maybe we need a little something that Voyager brought us. Maybe we need a little hope. Do we need a little hope right now? And everybody's cheering and screaming. I seriously think she either talked herself on that stage into answering those phone calls about Janeway, or it's happening. I think that Janeway show is happening.
Better.
I'm like, just based, again, I don't want to start rumors and shit, and there better not be any fucking reporters that are going to run it. I mean, there's already been, I'm sure, been talk on what she said on the Star Trek cruise. Don't run away with it, but like, I just, the vibes. I'm going off vibes. I am reporting on vibes. We do that on gaming podcasts sometimes. I think a Janeway show is happening. I really do. And I can't fucking wait. So, yeah, as 2100 Matt says, more Kate Mulgrew is reason enough. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Tiger Claw says a Janeway show and some of the original cast returning would be great. I think every single person save Beltran would return. I really do. I don't think there's anyone on that cast who wouldn't return.
I think Janeway should kidnap Picard and go out to the Delta Quadrant.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's right.
Meanwhile, you're resurrecting Todd's character.
Sorry, Pod Culture's reminding me about Kes. Sorry. Yeah, I also forgot about Kes. So no, she won't be coming either. She was effectively replaced by Seven of Nine on the main cast. And so my brain thinks of Jeri Ryan, who I think Jeri Ryan is in a place where she loves Trek more maybe than she did originally.
I loved her in Picard.
Yeah, she was so good in Picard.
So good.
And we all, again, I'm trying not to spoil, but the show has been over for some time now. The way that Picard ended, we all want to see that fucking show. We all want to see that fucking show where Picard ended. And spoiler alert, it has to do with Jeri Ryan and her new status on the Enterprise. And some of the Picard supporting characters carrying over into that too, including Michelle Hurd, who I fucking love as well. So like,
why can't I remember Todd's character's name, the other captain?
Well, Shaw. He was Shaw.
The Titan?
Shaw.
Shaw. That's
yeah. He's confirmed for the cruise next year, actually. He's a fan favorite. Good. Yeah, we love him.
God, I would love to go if he's going to be there, just because, I mean, I liked him on The Riches and then Supernatural and everything.
I love Stashwick. He's a nerd. Like, he gets so
he's
into
totally
it.
A nerd.
I love he's fucking
he's
great.
A, he's
I'm glad
a
they got him back.
He's a comic and gaming guy, so yeah.
But unfortunately, you know the events of Picard may make it difficult for him to come back.
I know.
At the same time, if Data came back, they can figure it out.
They can do things.
There's always space magic. Okay, we need to get into gaming.
Space magic.
Sorry, I'm sure you all don't mind a Trek tangent, but let's talk about what's going on in gaming. Let's talk about some of the news we missed over the last couple weeks. So for our kickoff topic tonight, we want to talk about some things that we missed. So I want to touch on some headlines, and then Loki, if you have anything you want to add, you sure can. But I think I've got a pretty good selection here from our collection pool that we keep in a secret Discord channel. So Nintendo Online, the gold points from Nintendo was announced. The gold points will be discontinued in March. So gold points has been Nintendo's sort of way of like the kickback points. When you buy things on Nintendo Online, you get the gold points, and then you can use those to get money off of future things. Those are going to be discontinued. And also your Nintendo Switch Online vouchers will not work with Switch 2 games. They're not going to work, which I think is kind of obvious, but it's been clarified that will not be happening. Any strong opinions on this? I mean, it seems a little soon for the gold points to be ending. Yeah, but it's not.
Like, maybe they weren't getting as much, like, I don't know, return on investment with it. I don't know.
I just use mine right away anyway.
Here's what I think it is. I think so many people are buying digital now. They don't need the incentive to get people to buy digital anymore.
Like, yeah, but you still get points for buying digital anyways, physical or digital.
That's true. You get.
But I would just use mine immediately anyway. Yeah. And it's negligible for any sort of added, you know, value.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
mm-hmm.
They could have thrown it in like where you, like, they could say, oh, you accrue like 10% additional points or whatever if you're enrolled in Nintendo Switch Online Expansion Pass or something like that, you know, like the sweeten the deal a little bit. But,
well, and to be fair, I don't want to set expectations unreasonably, but get out the wheel of plausibility, everybody. Bring it on out. Bring it on out. Perhaps the reason they're going to end this in March is that with the April Switch 2 announcement, they could be announcing a new kind of loyalty incentive program that maybe is going to be a little different in one way or the other. So that, I mean, the timing is pretty convenient with the April announcement and what could happen there. So just a thought, you know, to put on the wheel of plausibility as we eagerly await before too long now the April announcements of what the Switch 2 could be all about. So Okay. Let's see. There was also a Pokemon Presents that happened. So the biggest part of the Pokemon Presents was getting to see Pokemon Legends Zeta A, which looks so cool. They're changing up the battles significantly. They're going to be more real-time battles, which we haven't really seen in Pokemon. I mean, unless you count like the extreme spinoff games like Mystery Dungeon and stuff. But I don't know. Legends is kind of mainline to me. Legends is like adjacent mainline right now. And so like to see like the live stuff come to that game is, I think, going to be very, very interesting. So I will be eagerly awaiting that. There's some other stuff too that has to do with like the anime and stuff and, you know, some codes and, you know, whatever. But the Zeta A stuff was really the big stuff. We also heard that Fable for Microsoft, not going to happen until 2026. So don't expect Fable this year. This game's taken a long time to happen.
Yeah, they showed some gameplay though.
Yeah What'd you think? I didn't see the gameplay. What did you see? It, how was it?
I mean, it looks like Fable. I don't know, it doesn't look bad. It just looks like Fable.
Well, the big thing obviously with this is that the Forza Horizon gang is getting in on Fable, so of course there's a huge, because the Forza Horizon games fucking kick ass, I think you all know. So them doing Fable is very, you know, I think we were all kind of a little curious what that's going to look like. So
for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see. Oh, the Goldmaster series out of Digital Eclipse is going to be getting some physical editions, including Tetris Forever, the most recent Goldmaster. So score a win for physical editions for those that like to collect those. I think that's actually really cool, too, especially if Digital Eclipse is really trying to sell themselves as a Criterion collection of video games, which is what these feels like sometimes. People don't want to own the Criterion collection digital. Well, those words are going to leave my mouth and somebody's going to say, I own them digitally. Of course, you're different. But most people like to have those Criterion collection discs, you know, on hand. That's a big draw of it. So I think it's smart. I got to admit, as a gaming fan, I am kind of tempted to build up a collection. I don't know why, but I just feel the need. I'm a consumer whore. And how? Exactly. Let's see. MK1, Mortal Kombat 1, is going to be getting the T-1000 from Terminator, will be coming. That is going to include Robert Patrick returning to do the voice of the T-1000. Woo. Good time. Bloober Team.
Have you seen this boy?
Bloober Team is working with Konami on another game. So, you know, I think a lot of us were a little concerned about how Silent Hill 2 could turn out. And the answer was pretty damn good, as it turns out. So now that that has been well received, we know that Bloober and Konami are working on a new game based on Konami intellectual property. Could that be another Silent Hill or an original? We haven't heard anything about Silent Hill F in a while.
Give me a really good Silent Hill 3 remake.
Maybe. Or could it be like a new game?
Silent Hill 3 is
great. Yeah, I'd be very curious to see what becomes of that for sure. On the downside out of Warner Brothers, apparently the Wonder Woman game canceled. That's kind of shitty. Warner Brothers, of course, cancels everything, but Wonder Woman's cancellation is being blamed on a strategic change in direction. Usually this is code for the product we saw at the benchmark check-in did not meet expectations. And that's that you don't read that as the game was bad. That could be, we didn't see how we could make boatloads of money off of this, so we're not pouring any more money into this. And, you know, they learned a very hard lesson with Suicide Squad. And so, I don't know, there could be some things into that. But anyway, so Wonder Woman, unfortunately, is not going to happen, which is, I don't know, like, Wonder Woman as a character, I don't like to see getting shit on, especially during International Women's Month. This is... Like, leave it to Zaslav during International Women's Month.
No one cares about us.
If they did, I care.
A certain person wouldn't be elected.
I care. I try.
You know what I mean, Rob.
I know exactly what you mean. I'm trying not to not all men this. I really am. Okay. Anyway, let's see. Speaking of the Terminator stuff, a brand new 2D game called Terminator 2D No Fate. Inspired by the movie is going to be happening as well. And as Loki said,
it's Contra. That's, I mean, essentially.
No, it's not. It's legally distinct Contra.
Legally distinct Contra.
Because we have Terminator characters.
Strong homages.
Yes. Wouldn't that be funny if the up, up, down, down, left, right code worked in that game?
I don't know about that, but they had a scene where it's from, I think, Super Contra. There was a scene that was out of that. That I was like, okay, yeah, I know exactly what this is from.
Yeah, right. So good times. All right, so that's everything I had on what we missed over the last couple weeks. I don't know if you had anything extra you wanted to share, Loki, from before the second or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say real quick, there was a roadmap that looked very plain anyways of what Mojang's, their roadmap was for Minecraft for the next, 4 years. And one of the things, I mean, aside from just, the quarterly updates that they're doing to the game and some, movie tie-in stuff and product tie-in stuff and all that they're always doing... one of the things that was on there was Minecraft Spice or Project Spicewood, which
Spice World weird. Coming to Minecraft. Oh, I'm so excited.
Spice World, Spice Wood. Oh. Sorry. No Spice World. But there was screenshots that leaked from it. It's a sequel to Minecraft Dungeons. Or at least that's what it looks like.
Okay, so that might be interesting.
Look forward to that in about a year.
I'd like to see them elaborate on that a little bit. I think a second Minecraft Dungeons game could be pretty cool.
Yeah, because Legends wasn't so great. But Dungeons was pretty good.
Okay, yeah, I like Dungeons. Even I don't get super into Minecraft. I probably played more Dungeons than any of the other Minecraft games. I thought it was good because yeah. I love me a dungeon crawler. Surprise, surprise. So, yeah, it was good.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I was hoping, Legends was supposed to be, but then it was just some weird thing that really didn't mesh well with anything, so.
Is the Minecraft movie this month or next month?
That's next month.
Okay. It's soon, though. It's
right around the corner.
It's soon. You gotta be nervous. You gotta be nervous.
I'm not nervous. My expectations are low.
That's a good place to keep them.
It doesn't look horrible. But I don't like the dumbing down for the audience type of thing. Mm. And I get it that kids watch it too, but give the kids some credit, please. You don't have to shout out all the game mechanics. They have a bunch of clips of it too, where Jack Black's like, I'm going to use my water bucket to cushion our fall. That's a crafting table. Ooh, flint and steel. Ooh, another portal. Ooh, it's stop shouting out the game stuff. It's a Elytra wingsuit. Just stop. The kids that are going to go see the movie are going to understand what that is. And if they don't understand, then that makes them curious, and then they go figure it out. But stop, wasting everybody's time with shouting out what things are. Oh, I saw a tree. Oh, a cow. It's not interesting. So that's the only thing. It seems like a lot of these projects nowadays, it's bad writing that really kind of hampers them a lot. Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know. But, I mean, it's going to be ridiculous. I'll go see it.
Mike Deft in chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork says, I hate when media treats their audience as if they're dumb. Yeah, and we've seen this happen with video game movies a lot. Which is why I think when The Witcher happened, where, which, again, I know it's a novel, but let's be real, the game really helped. To see something like that was taken very seriously, in the way that it was adapted, I think is part of the reason why it was so successful, right? It didn't have to be so ridiculous in the way it called things out. Name check things from the game and stuff like that, or whatever trademarks the company might own or is trying to push product on, right? I think
the best dialogue is the one you don't have to write.
Yes, that's right. That's not forced. Totally.
No, just sometimes the silence tells more. Good acting.
Yeah, true. All right.
Good direction with good acting.
Well, let's talk about the directions of our gaming weeks. Oh, I'm sorry, Loki. I should see if you have anything else. I just assumed the Minecraft thing was the big one.
No, that was pretty much it. Yeah.
Cool. Then we'll talk about our gaming weeks.
The action figures for the movie are top notch. They're out already.
Oh, are they? Did you buy them?
Oh, boy. No, but my one of our other cast members on the Channel 64 did. And yeah, it's something.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, let's talk about our gaming weeks. And, you can dip into the last couple weeks as well if you want. But generally, how was your gaming week? We'll start with Darsakra.
It was Dead by Daylight, Dragon Age, The Veil Guard. I played some Palia. I played a few other things. Mostly, dicked around a little bit with some N64 stuff, and I made sure that my copy of Dobutsu no Mori, my English translation, works. And I'm saying Nintendo 64, Dobutsu no Mori, as in Animal Forest, because I'm going to stream it.
I think it'll be fun.
Because my next plan is to actually start playing New Horizons again, to dust off my village and see what it's like 2 years later.
You can't visit other people's towns in the N64 version, can you? Or was that actually a thing?
No.
With memory cards? Okay. I couldn't
remember.
That
was never a thing on that version. That okay. Teensy bit of history. It was, I think, only 8 months later that the GameCube one came out for Dobutsu no Mori.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when they implemented things that they'd wanted to have in the first one. Like, for example, the model for Blathers is in Dobutsu no Mori. On N64. The museum was actually fully implemented in the GameCube one. And they had a thing where if you sent in your your N64 saves to transfer to a memory card for GameCube, so they transfer your village for you for a small fee, you also get Ice Climber. That was... The other way you would get Ice Climber is they had like a brief contest to where you'd get this like a game pack that would attach, and you could get Ice Climber that way. But there were like, there was a very limited amount, number of them. And then we got Animal Crossing.
Right.
And they did a lot to Animal Crossing over what was in Dobutsu no Mori Plus, which was
the
first GameCube one. And they liked ours so much that they came out with Dobutsu no Mori E Plus, which had the e-reader. And that was, and then there was also like the IQ version, which is actually the N64 one. The IQ being the Chinese game player that isn't a game player, it's an education device. So there were something like 5 or 6 different versions of just Dobutsu no Mori, the first run of it.
Now that you say it, and I remember that a big selling point of Animal Crossing in the U.S. was it came with its own memory card because the file was so fucking big. It took up an entire memory card. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it was Ice Climber. It was maybe Balloon Fight. But there was some NES game that was like, oh, it's already on your memory card and will like be there in your village or whatever. Because I remember that's what drew me to the series.
It wasn't Ice Climber.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Ice Climber. I think it was Balloon Fight.
Yeah, I think it was Balloon Fight. But the four games that were not conventionally available, I mean, they did the Super Mario Brother e-reader card and they did an Ice Climber e-reader card. Good luck finding them. But it was Legend of Zelda and
I think Metroid was the other one. Was in there.
Metroid.
Yeah.
That's right, Metroid. It was those two. And there was some convoluted way that people were supposed to get the Legend of Zelda. But I've been following actually this one really good YouTube channel where he goes into the code, and they actually have now released tools so that you can do, you can't do Nook codes for the systems, but he figured out how to make the game pack ones and the custom villagers that they had for E+. So all kinds of different stuff. Like he has a Piplup in his village.
I thought there was a way they discovered back in the day, like if you named your character Link and you named your village Hyrule, they reverse engineered like codes for every single thing in the game.
That was Project Hyrule.
Okay, okay.
They have since learned how to do that without having to have a village named Hyrule.
Okay, okay. That's it.
Yeah.
Interesting. All
right. But yeah, so I've been actually on a deep dive into just Animal Crossing, like behind the scenes stuff and seeing how fucking broken the code is. There's all kinds of ways you can get into like the first beta map by like a little glitch for when you come out of, you know, Nook's Cranny or whatever it was back in the day. and then just like some different like lore stuff. It was pretty cool. And then actually something that Dan and I are probably going to be getting, and I'm telling you this because I think Alan might be interested in this as well. It's called the Saru, S-A-R-O-O, and it is a optical drive emulator for the Sega Saturn.
Oh. Hmm.
that cuts loading time. Basically, I mean, it's got the full games loaded on it, but it cuts the load time like significantly, which would be great for actually playing King of Fighters.
Interesting. Which,
of course, I own the games I would want to play, et cetera, et cetera. But it would be good to play the English translations.
Huh. Interesting. I'll have to ask him if he's heard of it.
Yeah, and it's just a card, by the way. It's just a card. It fits in the RAM card slot.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So that's been on the list. And just, you know, playing random shooters and whatever. I'm still kind of addicted to Fruit Mountain.
All right.
Oh.
Well, with that, we'll travel on over to Loki. How was your gaming weeks?
Well, I pretty much was working on Minecraft stuff. So I put out two episodes, kind of a lore epilogue to my season 3, because it just didn't really feel right going into season 4 without some of that lore being brought over. And it ties in with what I'm doing in this season. So it kind of worked out better that way. And then my first episode of season 4, and then I'm actually working on my second episode of season 4. I'm trying to get it, probably not going to be like weekly, but I'm trying to get it like close to, you know, seeing if I can just do less and put out more content that way. So I'm going to try to get another episode out this week as well. And yeah, so it's been a lot of working on Minecraft stuff. And then a little bit of Balatro.
That's addicting.
I finally got to a couple of the decks have the balanced version now, so that's kind of fun. Yeah, just playing through that stuff.
I forgot to mention I've been playing Balatro.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. I guess I need to try it again and see if it clicks for me another time. We'll see. All right. My gaming weeks. Obviously, I've been pretty busy with traveling and all that, but I did have some time this week to get into some games. Been playing my standbys. I'm almost done with the season in Diablo 4. I've gotten all the way to Torment 4, and I think my battle pass is like at level 87, so I only need to put in a little more time and I should clear out the battle pass. I would love to clear out the last page to get, I think there's like a raven pet or something you can get, but I'm like, the grinds are almost a bit much for me, so I don't know if I'll finish, because I want to play some other games as well. I don't want to just play Diablo 4 all day, every day. I do want to play some new games, and I actually did get around to a couple new games this week. The first is the very recent Suikoden 1 and 2 remaster that just came out on pretty much all platforms. I picked it up on PlayStation 5, and so I started diving in a little bit to Suikoden on the PlayStation, or Suikoden 1 on the PlayStation 5 version. And yeah, you know, I don't have the like quite sentimental mental attachment to this game that, you know, Shane, our pal, has, that, you know, I know he worked on the fifth game and he's an expert of all the lore and stuff. So of course he was very excited that this was coming out, slash worried, are they going to get it right and so forth. And last I talked to him, he seemed to be enjoying it well enough. And I've only played really a limited amount of the first game. I've only maybe like an hour and a half in, and I was doing some grinding and stuff too. So like story-wise, barely scratched the surface, but I'm enjoying it. I can already tell there's definite quality of life things that they have in this, like being able to speed up the battles, the way nice things look and fill out the screen in 16:9, you know, the profile pictures of everybody have been redone and they look nice. I understand the story has been retranslated. I am not a huge enough fan to pick up all the nuance of what's been translated, but it seems, you know, the story's interesting enough so far, and all that good stuff. Yeah, so I'm enjoying it, and I'll probably put more hours into it and try to play through it. I remember playing the original way back in the day. I didn't get very far, though. I think I like rented it from, you know, something and played a little bit. And then I remember playing through it again when they released it on PlayStation 3. I don't know if you guys remember, they re-released it on PlayStation 3, but it was just the PS1 version. And I actually played quite a ways into it at that point. I really don't remember it super well, like what even happened in the story and stuff. So I'm almost approaching it like it's a new game, but it's fine. It's fun. I like it. The other game I've been spending some time with is Microsoft's Avowed from Obsidian Entertainment, which just also, I think it came out right before I left on the cruise. So I spent some time this week catching up on it, and I'm actually enjoying it quite a bit more than I thought I would. I think it's getting a lot of comparisons to Elder Scrolls, which is interesting because I posted about that on Blue Sky. One of our listeners kind of replied going, it's not the greatest comparison because, you know, Elder Scrolls is so, you know, this is nonlinear. Avowed is, I would agree that Avowed is not as open. I mean, it's still open world, don't get me wrong, and there's still like all these different quests, but I would say in some ways I wouldn't see necessarily all of that as a negative, is that it's not so open versus Elder Scrolls, because sometimes in Elder Scrolls, like, you're almost like you're so overwhelmed with all of the different things to do, you never stay on track. So I feel like Avowed is a little bit more of a traditional RPG, I guess, in that sense. But I think the graphics are nice. It's a very pretty game. I really enjoy the combat. I've been trying to like play a mage style. Yeah, Questbuster in chat says Avowed is a lot of fun. Exploring off the beaten path is really rewarding. Yeah, like you kind of will go like, oh, there's a path over here. Is there a chest? And I feel like in some ways you get a quicker resolution to things than maybe you do in an Elder Scrolls game. This is not me knocking Elder Scrolls whatsoever. It's just me recognizing that, sure, like Elder Scrolls is going to be like a lot bigger of an undertaking, and maybe Avowed is more of just like a temporary little hit of that kind of, you know, first person, although I think you can make it third person too, first person RPG type of thing that I think a lot of people are looking for when there hasn't been a new Elder Scrolls game in literally 13 years, right? So, you know, I mm-hmm. think a game like Avowed makes a nice little, you know, yeah, it's different, but it's I think for fans of that kind of RPG genre, I think you're going to really like it. And even if you're not like a big Elder Scrolls person, I liked it just kind of like it's like an action type of fighting sort of game. I want to spend some more time with it. I'm sort of torn now between putting hours in Suikoden versus putting hours in Avowed, but I want to definitely play more Avowed because I enjoyed it for sure. Questmaster said there's also a lot of ways to solve many of the quests with major decisions changing the game in subtle or huge ways. Yeah, I definitely noticed that kind of BioWare sort of touch with, which again, Elder Scrolls has the multiple options for how you answer things too, but I kind of got more of a BioWare feeling from the way Avowed was implementing it. And maybe that's because you can see when you don't have the stats to do a certain something, you'll see, and you can't, which I think is interesting. It doesn't even tell you what the option is. It just says like perception, 1 of 3 gray dashes. So you don't even know what it would have said, which I think is interesting. I guess maybe they're trying to play into replayability value, but there's so many options anyway. So it's just, I don't know. And the other thing I learned through Avowed, the fish man is, a lot more attractive than I think he should be for a fish man. And I was like, why am I so attracted to fish man? But I learned fish man is voiced by the same person that voiced Garrus. I thought he sounded familiar. I was like, why does this sound so familiar? And then it hit me in one scene. I was like, is this Garrus's voice actor? And then I went and looked it up and I was like, oh, it is. Yeah, Mike Def says Rob's Shape of Water moment. It was suddenly that movie makes a lot more sense. I'm being a little silly, maybe, but seriously, I just was a little, I was like, the fish man's really attractive. Even if he has sharp teeth. Questbuster says he almost never left my party. He's such a good tank. See? And he's effective, especially if you're going to be like a magic person. Anyway. All right. Let's move on. That's it for our gaming weeks. I don't have a lot of housekeeping for now. We've got, you know, I took my vacation, so I'm out of vacation time for a good long time. So we'll be here. So anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about what's going on in gaming news. Loki, why don't you start us off?
Yes. So, you know, in this economy, it's hard to buy these expensive brand new, gaming systems. Well, Sony's looking right out for you because, they're going to offer the PlayStation 5 for rent. Now, this is kind of similar to, I think Microsoft did something similar. It was less of a rent, more of like kind of,
it was cable contracts or something. It was that whole thing. Yeah. It was like, if you sign a 3-year, it was a mobile phone contract. If you sign a 3-year contract to have Game Pass or something, we'll throw in the Xbox 360 or whatever it was at that time.
Yeah,
Xbox
One. So essentially they have different options you can choose from, including if you want to lease a pro console for 36 months or a digital edition for 1 year. Curious on the pricing on this. If they even say, probably not, but wait. Yeah, there's other options that you course, you can lease PlayStation VR 2, the remote portal player. Why would you do that? I don't know. But anyways, PlayStation 5 Pro console, it ranges of from 1895 euro a month to lease that, and then the digital version 1349 a month. The slim 1199, and then of course PlayStation VR is actually almost the same price as the whole console, so that's pretty expensive.
They also sliced the price of the VR too, not that long ago, I think.
Before
we were out.
I don't know if I would ever do that. I don't think it's necessarily cheaper than buying the console. The console itself is about, you know, 400. So it's basically, you know, like a couple years and you have it paid off. I don't know, man. If you got to lease a console for a while, maybe you should just not buy the console. And just wait.
There was a part of me that was wondering, and I'm going to admit I didn't do the time to do the math, but I know sometimes these rent to own things can be a little bit predatory, right? Because I remember we just had an issue with one of those big computer companies, NZXT, was it them? That had the whole, like, they were renting the computer. I mean, there were some other things that came into play about, like, the specs weren't what they were advertising. So it's not, I'm not totally making a direct comparison. But I remember when that story came up on this show, we were talking about these rent-to-own things have been – these scams have been around since the 70s, right? To try to – rent-a-center with couches and microwaves, you know, appliances that cost a lot of money that people who live a little more – paycheck to paycheck can't always afford. So they get into these schemes where they end up paying like 3-4 times the price of what it would be to just buy it at a Sears outlet or something.
Yeah, and I don't know if you necessarily get to keep it though, like, because a lot of these things, let's see here, they don't even ever talk about, you know, if you get to keep it. It says, when does my lease begin and end?
Well, I would think with technology, you should keep it at the end because, well, here's my reasoning. What are they going to do? Because there's going to be new technology in 3 years. So it ought to be designed. Right. I mean, by
They said, what happens when it's time to upgrade? At the end of your lease, you can simply upgrade for free and return your old device. And then you have, you know, 14 days it says to transfer your data. It says you can keep the device and continue paying monthly or cancel your lease and return your device. So you don't get to keep it.
Interesting. What are they going to do with all the old hardware? I guess they flip it and sell it.
Once again, like, what I would do is, like, if you don't have a PlayStation 5 by now, just wait. Just wait longer because you could probably get the first generation PlayStation 5s for people that upgraded. A little bit less expensive, or just at this point, just wait. Like, wait for the next thing that's coming out, because it's been a few years already, and who knows if they're going to have another refresh or if there's going to be some other, like, price cuts and stuff. Like, what is it that's on PlayStation that's coming out soon that you really just need to rent a PlayStation to get it? Like, I can't imagine. And then look at, like, the library, like, especially if you went the digital route.
Yeah.
Cool. You got a library of games and now you return your device and you can't play those anymore. Like, why would you do that? Well, I don't know. And I would buy the console and just, like, at least you could sell it later.
By the time 2026 is here, we're going to be talking about PlayStation 6. Now, I don't know, you know, because we're on like a 6-year cycle at this point, right? Because PlayStation 5 was 2020, PlayStation 4 was 2014, PlayStation 3 was maybe 2007, 2008. You know, PlayStation 2 was 2001. Everything is a blur at this point. So it's like a 6 or 7 year cycle. Maybe I'm slightly wrong. Then I would say with everything that happened with the pandemic, I actually would not be surprised if PlayStation 6 wasn't until 2027 at this point. But still, you know, Loki, you make a good point. Like, at this point, either buy somebody's use the upgrades to a pro or just hold out for a PlayStation 6.
Yeah. You know, let's just say you did a 36-month lease. You're paying 50% more for that device than you would if you just, and by that time, like, assuming that it's gone down in price, like, you could have purchased it for probably even half of the total amount. You know, it doesn't seem to make sense to me to do it. And, like, if you're really that hard up on cash, just do yourself a favor, go without it for a little bit of time and you can save up the money to buy the system outright instead of paying monthly to do it. It just be patient, save up if you really want it, and then wait and purchase it, because I can only tell you, these systems are only going to get less expensive as time goes on.
Just do the math. Do the math. Make an informed decision. Do the math and make an informed decision.
Don't get locked into like leases for a game console. That is ridiculous. Don't put yourself in that position to, you know, ruin your credit perhaps or whatever. I mean, I don't know.
Do they have credit scores in the UK like we have over here?
Just be satisfied.
Do they have credit scores in the UK like we have over here? Because I know it's notoriously an issue in the US about how the credit scores fuck like everything up over here. But I guess that's a discussion for another show.
If your parents are, say you're a child, your parents are loaded and they want to, you know, buy you a console, have them lease it for 3 years, put it in your name and have them make all the payments. There you go. Your credit score goes up. I mean, you can do that too, but like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just wait.
All right. Well, on the flip side, hurry up and play this game because this game is about to go away, which is a little bit surprising. I didn't really predict that games would leave Nintendo Switch Online ever, but here we are. We are in the case where Super Soccer is going to be pulled. So this game is going to be pulled on March 28th, and that game will no longer be available. Of course, no reason given by Nintendo for it. I'm sure they don't want to advertise what it is. We don't know if it's the rights or some other part of the agreement or what all is going on, but that game is going to be leaving. And this leaves, you know, quite a few people shocked because, you know, we kind of assumed, you know, they were building a Netflix style library of games. And granted, I guess shows come and go from Netflix. But at the same time, where the fuck else is Super Soccer going to go? Is this like a game that's in such heavy fucking demand that they're going to put out their own release of the game or something like that? Like, I just don't, like, it's not like we're talking about, I don't know, Mega Man or something that we could see in a collection, which isn't even on the NSO because Capcom sells that Mega Man collection separately or something like that. I don't understand what the rights holders have to gain from withholding this. This is not exactly a must play game from the years, but all right, go off, I guess.
Maybe they're going like, you know, the physical route with it again, gonna re-release it like they do with all these, like I Am 8-Bit and like the collector's type stuff. There was a lot of obscure games that they put out.
Well, so, and let's be real, Super Soccer, it was by Human Entertainment was the developers, and worldwide Nintendo was the publisher, although in Japan Human Entertainment published it. So, you know, I don't know if there's, you know, weird issues with the rights holding there that maybe, you know, whoever owns the Human Entertainment stuff, maybe they're asking for more money now or something. It's all, who knows? Like, we could, again, if with Nintendo not saying anything, we have nothing left but to make shit up about what's going on. So, but I mean, it wasn't that good of a soccer game either. I'm sorry. I'm going to say it. It wasn't that good of a soccer game compared to some of the options out there.
They just put in, funny, I ran across it yesterday, speaking of classic games and stuff. They opened a brand new retro gaming store, actually, right there on Sunrise.
Oh, really?
Basically, I think where Pier 1 was.
Oh.
And so they have, now it's Fire and Ice Games. And I noticed, though, on the they have, like, at first I thought it was all card games.
Wait.
Like, they do have lots of Magic the Gathering stuff.
Wait, isn't Fire and Ice the name of that is that Fired Up? The place in Roseville that used to be sorry to be local, everybody. There, that place in Roseville that used to be the Christian bookstore years and years and years ago. It's in like the, I remember all this shit from maybe when I was a kid. I grew up in that neighborhood. There's like a place called Fired Up or something, like an e-gaming lounge over there.
There's at a Sunrise. Fire and Ice Games that's in Rockland. I don't know if that's the same place.
That's a different place too. Now that you mention it, that's an arcade, isn't it?
No, that's also it's another franchise of this.
Oh, one. Okay.
And so there are multiple stores. But yeah, I saw Neo Geo on the window is what I was trying to get at.
Okay.
You know? So I'm excited to see what they have in there. But yeah, it looks like shelves of just like classic games and stuff. Yeah, I do need to go in there and check it out. I didn't get to last night, but
wait, we shouldn't be giving him free advertising. I got to delete this out of the podcast. We shouldn't be giving him free advertising. Well, they can pay. They can pay us.
I know. Okay. I just have to go check it out. Yes. See it for myself. We're not going to say positive or negative anything.
Yeah, they may be good, but they may not.
It's just nice to see like other retro game stores because some of these, especially like with the whole bubble with retro gaming and stuff, like the prices of games have been like really high. But I've been starting to see in like different places. Like there's a bookstore that has like used books that also sells like new in box NES games sometimes. And they had like Bad Dudes the other day for like, I think it was like $25 or something in box. It was like ridiculous. Oh, but you can get all sorts of things around here. But yeah, I got to check more of that stuff out so I can buy more games I'm never going to play, but I still want them.
Okay, so the place, that's the case. The place I was thinking of is on Sunrise and Douglas. I grew up in this area, so I know this area very well. Sunrise and Douglas out in Roosevelt. It's called Fired Up Esports Lounge. So, but the name is really similar. That's why I was like, is that the same thing?
I wonder, you remember, like, this is a throwback. We talked about it, but I still haven't seen it in person. At least I don't think I have. There was the Walmart in Roseville had the Esports Lounge that opened up inside of it.
Really?
Because... they had a whole esports lounge that they were gonna be putting their own like brand of PCs in there, which are terrible, but like you know they were in there. But yeah, it was such a weird thing at the time. I remember we talked about it. It was like years ago. Okay. But I wonder if that's still there. I'm kind of curious.
OLR goes to Roosevelt. We already did that for episode 1000. I was like, OLR goes to Roosevelt. Oh wait, we already did that last year. Yeah. All right. Anyway, but I should say just real quick. So we are losing Super Soccer, which, you know, whatever. It's more the principle that's the story here. I could give a shit about the game, but it's the principle is like the whole like, well, what else is going to happen? Hopefully we don't see this happen frequently. But I will point out Nintendo pretty quick to flip an announcement around saying, hey, guess what? We're going to have some different games coming to the service instead. We're going to get the Game Boy version of Donkey Kong, which was more of a precursor to Mario plus Donkey Kong and those puzzle games. That's going to be happening for Game Boy, as well as Mario's P-Cross. If you love P-Cross, if you're Bobby Blackwolf and you love P-Cross, you get Mario's P-Cross available on Game Boy. Actually, I like P-Cross too, so that's exciting for me. Okay, let's move on. Dark Sakura.
I have to swallow the bile back down just thinking of this again because of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently Acclaim, as in that was the subsidiary that did Mortal Kombat back in the day, is back as an indie publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to do original IPs. So, and this is from Alex Yosef, who is the CEO, saying that it's, quote, a relaunch, revitalization of the Acclaim brand with completely new team. Some players have an association with Acclaim in the past, but it's an all new team, and that they're going to support indie developers and new IP. And there's just stuff going on about this that just does not sit well with me.
There's a lot of spin in what you're reading too. The all new team, all new IPs. You know why? Because this has nothing to do with the Acclaim in the 90s.
At least they're not launching an NFT yet, right?
Why are they having a wrestler involved?
That's a whole other issue in this thing too, because apparently Bobby had a call on his show tonight, and apparently everything that guy has touched has not gone well either. Here's the reality of the situation. The name Acclaim was literally in the discount bin at Walmart. Somebody bought it and said, y'all remember Acclaim, right? Y'all ready to see what indie games we're gonna make? Let's go. And of course now everybody's going, fuck yeah, I want to see a new Double Dragon, or hell yeah, let's do a new NBA Jam because Acclaim gave us those. Guess what? Acclaim doesn't own that shit anymore. They've all been...
No, they do not.
They all got farmed out at the discount bin to other companies as well. So, because we've seen new Double Dragon games come out from other companies. We've seen, you know, NBA Jam, Arcade 1-Ups and stuff. They're all with other companies now. So this is the name and probably that same logo from the past. Otherwise, this is, you know, this is very much a don't ask to see what's behind the curtain kind of thing, because it's a pro wrestler and maybe a couple people that were involved with the claim before. Maybe some people they're throwing money at to say, can you just say that you were involved here?
And they say that they've raised a good bit of money and that they'd be putting out quality games at a slower pace. They've got some people involved, like Russell Binder has been involved in like some of the game-based movies. They've got a partnership with Mega Cat Studios. I just the whole thing doesn't sit well with me. There's something going on behind the curtain.
No, I feel you. Like, I feel like whatever game they announce is going to be like, we've used AI to make this game. Like, I just, and again, I'm going off nothing but vibes. This is vibes and speculation only, but I can't help but feel like it's going to be like, oh, the great AI adventure is coming out, or just something that's just going to smell like garbage. But hey, prove me wrong.
What IPs I'll be do the they first still one. Have?
None.
Yeah, so that's, how could they...
That's why they have that lovely marketing thing of all new IPs and all new people.
I can't. Let me see. They have some other partners. They have Phil Toronto, partner at Vayner Fund, and Eric Vogel with Jet Management.
People that gave us money. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm just... They're saying, and this is another quote from here, licensing icons, professional athletes, living music legends, and seasoned veterans who have defined the intersection of video games and pop culture. That's from their press release.
Yeah, I'll be waiting for that first trailer. And you know what? I will be the first to shut the fuck up if they prove me wrong with that trailer. So you know what? Prove me wrong. Do it. Let's see.
I have a feeling, though, that we're going to be proven right.
I have that feeling too. Dijarama S in chat says, to be fair, Double Dragon is back with the original license holder, Technos and Arc System Works. Yes, I'm sorry. I do not mean to taint the good name of Double Dragon, but I'm just using it as an example. But yes, Double Dragon has nothing to do with this new Acclaim, just to be absolutely clear.
They're also saying that they're going to be doing their first game this year, around third quarter, should be released. And there's another quote on here saying that they're admitting it'll be tough with however many games come out on Steam. I'm seeing some shovelware in the future.
Can't wait to be blown away. But I'm expecting a soft
maybe
breeze.
Maybe we're just jaded.
Maybe we are. Maybe we are.
But I feel that we have good reason to be.
Absolutely. If it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck, it's probably a duck.
It ain't a goose.
Anyway, Dark Tetsuya in chat says, yeah, I feel like someone else did something similar with a different company. You are absolutely right. This was bugging me for the last couple hours before the show started. I know we had this exact same story like within the last 6 months about another company. And of course, I cannot remember who that company is. In the moment, I'm hoping somebody in chat remembers, but there was another company that this literally just happened to. Same thing. Like the name, they bought the name only and they don't have anything else. So Bobby did an interesting dive on his show and he was like, you know, the Epic's trademark has been abandoned. I was like, I want to buy the Epic's Games trademark. Are you fucking kidding?
I want Exidy just because it's neat to say.
It is. It is.
Who wants Exidy?
Was it THQ? It might have been. It might have been. Because it feel like it was one of those companies that got fire sold. But anyway, you know, here's the lesson to learn out of this. The name of the publisher is a name. Don't let it carry any more weight than that. Unless it's like A24 Films. That's like the only one where maybe I'll be like, all right, yeah, you can sit up straight in your chair when you hear that. Because it's probably going to be a good movie. But even then, it's always going to be a win. So
everyone does a stinky crap at some point in their life.
That's right. That's right.
We are not immune to stinky crap syndrome.
Or the my new favorite term, in shitification. It sums up what's happened to so many companies so well, the enshittification of the internet and things like, you know, Twitter, you know, X or whatever you want to call it. And I'm going to use that term again later on because we have a story coming up later that's I'm going to use that term again. That's my favorite term is enshittification. All right. Let's move. Oh, speaking of shitty things. Yeah, oh,
okay. Keep going. I'm just.
Yeah, no, we're going to sit here and wait for that trailer. And I'm going to, you know what, use that spite that y'all have listening to us be, you know, kind of being very lukewarm on this tea, you know, use that spite to really blow us away with the trailer. And I will be the first one to say, wow, did I misfire on this or what? But I'm just sitting here going, we've been doing this a very long time and we're pretty good at spotting ducks. We're very good at Duck Hunt 23 years later. Did you know that the second controller could be used to control the duck?
Hey!
Loki, speaking of shitty things happening at companies.
Yes, and continuing on with the trend of laying off workers at studios in the game industry, Sony is back with more cancellations and more layoffs. So they apparently sent out notice to Visual Arts Group, which was based out of San Diego, that their last day at Sony would be March 7th. And the team had done some internal art and technical support for first-party PlayStation Studio games and worked on The Last of Us Part 1 and 2 remasters. Of course, Sony didn't make any comment about it. They said, you know, the former PSVA project manager, Abby Lamaster, said, "It was tough waking up to messages that my friends and former co-workers were laid off this morning. The layoffs today hit hard, and you know, they let go developers with decades of subject matter expertise, talent that will be extraordinarily difficult to recoup." I mean, we've heard that many, many times. "This industry can be unpredictable, but skill and experience and passion of the people I worked with are undeniable." And then along with that, we've got word that there's more live service cancellations. We talked about the God of War one that was being worked on at Blue Point Games. Also, they apparently, they said for every title that we've worked on, you know, to review, where the focus was sustainability for our investments in these titles, we've included areas such as looking at what can be outsourced, for example, to avoid too high peak resource on development teams because the costs can be sticky. So essentially that they're looking to outsource to other cheaper teams and not have a lot of staff on hand as the need for those staff fluxes. It's an excuse, whatever. They're making boatloads of money and they need to lay people off to keep up the illusion of infinite growth because that's what we do. That's annoying.
Yeah, that's it's just it's hard to be a fan of this industry sometimes. It really is. Like, anyway, that's all I got to say. It's also very hard to be a fan of the government lately. And my First Amendment rights allow me to be able to say that and be critical of the government. And there's a lot of things that the government has done lately that I don't agree with, such as the tariffs that are happening and such as the nature of the on again, off again, on again, JK, off again, on again, JK.
Why? Well, it's like you wouldn't, they don't know what they're doing or something.
Why is this happening? Oh, because the stats that aren't true. Oh, you know, we want to bully you into becoming a state, even though you are a completely sovereign. It's just, y'all, I'm so tired.
We need more tariffs. What are tariffs?
Tariffs. Do those. What are those? They're not taxes, right? No? Okay, good.
Those are the things that give money, right? Those are the things that decrease your trade with other countries.
So here's the thing. I'm sure some of you love to roll your eyes when we talk about politics, but guess what, Mimi? It affects gaming. And here's the proof in the pudding. Because now we're hearing about how tariffs may impact the disc production. And I want to say Mike Def said something about this when we were first talking about all this shit back in January. He called this because he said, well, the discs are produced in Mexico. So if these tariffs end up happening, there's going to be a lot of shit happen. Well, guess what? The analysts have finally caught up to Mike Def. They all done told you. But now
they raise the cost of the games to like $90, and then somehow magically the digital version, which never went to Mexico to have the disc mastered, will somehow also be $90. Wow, who saw that coming?
So an analyst by the name of Matt Piscatella, who works for Circana, and I'm not gonna shade this guy because it's not a news post coming from X. It's a news post coming from Blue Sky, and I'm gonna say, you know what? I appreciate an analyst who realizes that you need to get the fuck off of X, right? So I'm gonna be very kind to this individual tonight. But basically goes on to say, you know, echo the things that Deft was telling us a while ago. A very small piece of all this, but it wouldn't surprise me to see physical games that would be subject to tariffs simply not get made. With publishers moving to an all digital strategy, what a mess. And that's something that Matt wrote over on Blue Sky. And that was in response to a post by another individual named Daniel that said 20% tariff impacts video game consoles, 25% tariff on Mexico impacts physical video games. China is where most hardware continues to be manufactured. Same for Mexico with discs. And so, if these dumb dippy tariffs end up happening, that's probably going to be the nail in the coffin of the physical disc industry. Now, I mean, you know, there will always be some made, you know, like a limited run type of thing, a Criterion type of thing and all this stuff. So, you know, when I say it's dead, I don't mean like completely absent, but I mean most major publishers will probably move away from making disc games wherever they possibly can. And you can thank the tariffs for that. And why? Fentanyl or something? Even though we send them all these guns? Freedom?
No.
Make sense.
It doesn't make any
sense. Sorry, everyone, people who voted for that thing, you did this. Fuck you. I don't feel sorry for any of you who have regret, because fuck you. We told you this shit was going to happen, and did you listen to us? Fuck no. I'm a little bit worked up, sorry.
No, I get it, because these are
I'm not sorry. I'm allowed to be angry.
These are the same people.
Fuck all of them.
These are the same people that will go on social media and say, but my video games. Well, guess what?
Well, I don't give a shit about what you think about your video games. I give a shit about what we think about our video games.
I'm just telling you, the call is coming from inside the house, y'all.
And Phil of Nine says, I can't stop thinking about the government workers who inevitably voted for him and lost their jobs. I don't feel sorry for them, but I do feel sorry for the rest of us who are suffering for their absence.
Mm-hmm.
Because how many more plane crashes have we had since the dissolution within the aeronautics industry? Or in the oversight in the government?
Yeah.
Firing essential nuclear monitors? Doing it all by fucking AI? Or a database search?
It is.
I do not feel bad for anyone who has voter regret over that creature.
It is the grandest example of, and we see this in the gaming industry all the time, right? That the people in the boardroom don't know what the fuck is actually happening on the ground floor. Like, this is like literally like a shining star in the sky example of all of that, that unfortunately we're all suffering the consequences of. But you can actually see this play out in real time on CNN or your favorite news channel of choice at any time. Is the people in the boardroom have no fucking idea what the rest of the company is doing. And you can see that their brash decisions made from Excel spreadsheets and PowerPoints have a real impact on everything downstream. And it's mind blowing. And then, Dark Soccer, you bring up an excellent point that's going to transition very kindly into our next story. Now we're talking about bringing in AI into these things where it's like AI's not ready. And look,
did we not see War Games?
We could have an entire chat about the whole like, where is, look, and I'm not shitting on AI in every single circumstance, because like the oldest video games use what I would call AI in how you do computer opponents. And I've
just different varieties exactly. of it. And you have assistive AI, you have like you were saying, you have your AI in games
right.
that control events, and which has existed for a while.
What it comes down to is that AI is a tool, not a replacement. And all of the times,
there's no true intelligence yet.
We've seen people try to use AI as a replacement. It backfires spectacularly. And I mean that to mean AI as a replacement for making decisions, which is what we're hearing about in this situation. And like for I just a brilliant example of like AI is just not fucking ready. And I see you see this everywhere in the real world. All of these companies are fighting to piss on each other to make sure they are the first to implement AI, because heaven forbid they fall behind in this race. Have you all stopped to consider that maybe it's not time to implement AI yet, because AI isn't right a lot. It's not right a lot. In fact, so you know,
it's not really AI anyway. It's not intelligent.
Yeah, that's true.
It cannot think. It's a glorified fucking database.
You know how like your cell phones will do the summarized messages, and this is on all platforms, okay? It will do like the summarized messages that it credits as AI. I just had this happen yesterday. I was in a group chat where somebody was sharing the story about, through dating, they had the confidence to come out of the closet or whatever. Well, I read the little summary and it said, and I'm changing the names to protect the incident. It said, Susan once dated so-and-so and it gave them the confidence to come out of the closet. This person had been posting memes and they caught a fucking stray. Like, this person didn't come out of the closet, but AI tried to out them. I'm using it a completely ludicrous scenario, but I use it to say, like, this isn't ready. Why are we all in a rush to implement something that doesn't work? It's like the light bulb is guaranteed to, like, okay, one out of every 50 light bulbs is going to explode and burn down the house, but boy, oh boy, are they efficient. And now every house in America is rushing to replace all of their light bulbs with this. Well, it's only wrong like 0.5% of the time. It's a mitigatable risk, right? I can't stand it. And it's happening everywhere. In some places, like maybe like a Photoshop tool or something, or an internally made machine learning algorithm to help upscale games from 4K to 8K. Sure, we can handle that, because that's been done in this controlled environment that's meant to do one or two specific tasks. Fine.
Or like on-device photo enhancement.
Sure.
Which is basically Samsung's entire model for their photos right now.
But it's just, do we need it? And like literally, you go into your email, here's your AI summary. You go into the news, here's your AI summary. You go into a Google search, here's your AI summary. Take your AI summary and shove it up your pee hole. I don't want it. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I love that when I went to a software conference that was trying to tell us what we needed to implement AI for our clients, the testing of the AI has a threshold. 90% of our tests pass. That's ready for production, which means the AI gives the wrong result 10% of the time.
That's too big of a threshold.
That's a big problem.
And I mean, and all right, the Lincoln Lee, we know it's not going away, but it's not quite ready for prime time.
That's exactly it. It's a half baked potato.
Work.
It's a half baked steak. It might still have salmonella, but most of them are okay.
And I honestly, I'm not mad at the whole summary thing. You know, it can be kind of cool. You know, especially for people who like have very busy jobs and need to get the information at a glance. That I don't have a problem with that. And it doesn't work all the time, just like with your example. But I think that if they see something is important enough, they'll go in and actually read the thing. And so, I mean, that I'm giving people too much credit. Never mind. I am very much though against generative AI unless it is a internally trained model. Like what Adobe flat out put it in their release statement, that all of their generative AI models in art are in-house created. They hired their artists to make the material that trains their tools.
Hmm.
I like that. The same with Apple. The same with, I think, Google service does it. I don't want to give them credit because I'm really upset with Google. But there's just too much out there. And I mean, and you can flat out go onto ChatGTP and say, I need a Python code that calculates this, 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 and this, and it will generate a Python code that won't work. But still,
here's
it's
good.
It's just, I could sit and pretend I can fully, I'm a beginner at Python.
Mm-hmm.
But I could sit and probably figure out with what I know and have ChatGTP write the models for me and make something that looks competent, but I only did 3% of the work. And that wouldn't be fair to the people who actually know Python and program in it. So
I want to respond to this comment in chat because I want to use it to illustrate where I think the AI system is broken right now. And it's the Lincoln Lee in chat says, I can ask it to code a website for me and it will do it in 5 minutes. Here's my question. Are you taking what is being produced and are you validating it or customizing it to fit your needs, you know, based on whatever it is you're asking it to do? Are you using that to maybe jumpstart what it is you want to do because, you know, whatever? I actually don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is that there are so many companies out there right now that would say, I want to code the website and do it in 5 minutes and then immediately publish that website because they fired the person that would do the validation check or do the middleman check or it costs too many hours or things like that. To me, what you're doing there—
That's different. That's assistive AI.
Exactly. Because to me, that's like Google 2.0. And I think eventually that's where AI is going to end up is it's like, jumpstart me this. But, you know, because what would you do if AI wasn't a thing and you had to code a website? You would probably Google, show me what website looks like, you know, and you'd probably try to find a pretty good Google search and kind of try to make your own.
Hire Squarespace or something.
Yeah, use that, which is fine too. But that's, to me, that's the big disconnect right now with this AI thing, is that there are too many people that want to push to publish without validating it or like bothering to like clean up what the AI starts with. And the AI is getting it wrong way too much of the time for that to be.
They're like, it can't go wrong. It's logic.
Yeah.
Of course it's going to do it right. 90% of the time is enough until you find that bug that's going to fucking break your game for that 10%.
Melt down your computer and your NES system, this whole limited run game. It's had nothing to do with AI.
Think of bigger systems, security breaches. They find the exploit built that the AI fucking missed.
All right. Anyway.
You know, and one last thing.
No, yeah.
That example that I gave about the Python thing, I can get away with that where I work, but I wouldn't be able to apply for a job and lie that I know full Python.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where I'm getting to for the people who are lying their way into jobs and taking them away from the qualified individuals who know the thing.
This is why in-person interviews are coming back, because they want to make sure people don't use ChatGPT.
Yeah.
It's wild. Anyway, I don't want to spend too much time on the AI soapbox, but I know it involves in our next story too, right, Dark Sakura?
Yeah. So there is a company called WeLevel, and they have raised $5.7 million to, as they say, revolutionize procedural game development. And you know what they want to do? AI. The investment company behind them is Bitcraft Ventures, but they want to expand innovative AI tools to streamline game development and, quote, create dynamic, personalized gameplay. And this is coming from Christian Heimel, who is the CEO of WeLevel. They have actually already started. They began their project development in 2021 using in-house generative models. Okay, that part. I'm okay with in-house generative models. If it all was made in-house, I'm cool with that. But here we go. They have brought in more investors, including one of the board members at Roblox, the co-founder of Shopify, some Crunchyroll people. I mean, Oculus co-founder Nate Mitchell, just a bunch of people in there. And they're wanting, as they say, they want to build games driven by passion, not monetization. And so they're wanting to use AI to streamline their production so they can put more focus on creativity. But at the same time, what are they taking? What's going to happen to the quality, like we were saying before? What's going to happen to the people who are skilled in this sort of labor? What's it going to, how is AI going to be able to translate the thought of a creative human being and make it come out the way they want? I keep thinking of that damn Coca-Cola commercial. You remember that junk heap?
Oh, yeah. The one for Winter that just looked really, yeah, wonky. Yeah.
I just keep seeing that in my head. Ugh. Yeah.
No, I get it. And, you know, again, go ahead.
Oh, well, Hymerl is saying, and this is a quote, having used AI in my former companies, I recognize the potential it has to empower small, passionate teams to produce games. And, but like, here's where I am with this, is that if it's all in-house trained, I'm still kind of two minds about it, because what's going to happen to these talented people now that they're going to miss out on because they have a database to build their tool? You know?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, again, like, we're not going to get to this world of 8K games. And so, you know, if you think it takes a long time to make a video game now, I understand, like, AI is inevitable in order to cut some corners to make that happen and having those tools. When it's internally developed stuff, you know, yeah. And I think inevitably you have more people there, you have more jobs that are going to kind of shift to being able to be specialists that work with these tools in order to get those types of things done faster. I think inevitably that's kind of what happens. But again, the more you start to replace, the more it's going to show, and it always shows.
Here's where I start getting that feeling, that terrible feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a quote from the press release. Beyond the initial project, the team has plans for expansive user-generated content and aspirations to expand into other genres and settings. Right now they're working on a sandbox game. And they're going to be at GDC 2025. It's the part where they're saying plans to use user-generated content, which means it's going to be probably built into whatever agreement to play the game that your content that you create in-game or in-universe is fair game for them to use. Why do you think I left DeviantArt over that years ago, because they were saying that we can use your stuff and sell it, and then now they're full-on have their AI models in there, trained off of the user's data.
Yeah.
And this is where I really, really, really draw the line.
I think Bobby Blackwolf has a very interesting sort of analogy here that I think for me sums it up as well. Saying a few decades ago, people's appliances like refrigerators and washing machines lasted for decades. Then we stopped having humans build them and instead used robots to build them. Now you're lucky if they last 5 years. But that fridge was built faster and cheaper. That's true. The ice machine in my fridge broke in less than a year. We'll see. We'll see what develops. It's still an emerging thing. But that's, again, going back to what my point really is in this, it's emerging. So stop trying to shove it in everything before it's finished. It's not finished for a lot of things that they're trying to make us believe it is. So
it's people want to be the first so badly, and they want to be right so badly that they'll take what they think is a reasonable risk and get shit. You know, shit in, shit out. That's how it is, you know. My feelings on this are very complicated, and right now I am having just a touch of emotional blindness that I can't really say how I feel about it. I just know that I feel kind of sick about it.
All right, well, let's move on anyway for time.
Yeah.
So let's move on to our next story. So, Loki, what do you have for us?
All right. So let's talk about a beta program coming to the PlayStation. Sounds like kind of like what we have with Microsoft and the Xbox Insider program, but this is going to be something that they're rolling out to kind of consolidate all the different beta programs that they've had across the Sony and PlayStation apps. So this brand new beta program that they announced at the PlayStation Initiative on March 4th is a new program planned to be Sony's main consolidated way to allow interested PlayStation fans to test out brand new PlayStation 5 features, the PlayStation app updates, and even early game beta tests. And along with that, like I said, they're just consolidating everything. Instead of having to sign up for individual beta programs, it's just all going to be under one umbrella. And not really sure what that means going forward, as far as what things they may be testing, but it's all brand new. So I guess we'll see a lot of stuff leak out at some point, because even though they have you agree to NDAs and stuff, it
oh yeah, that always works out. That always works.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Are you gonna sign up for it?
No, I don't have a PlayStation.
Oh, I thought you did. I thought you did by now.
No, I have a PlayStation 4.
Oh, okay. I have a PlayStation 5, but I don't know. I don't get excited about a lot of the interface betas. Maybe there's something coming that I really feel like I need to be on the front lines of, sure, but I don't know. I haven't seen it yet. So, yeah. All right. Let's talk about the Diablo 4 Battle Pass, because I do love to talk about Diablo. But I also recognize that the Battle Pass is kind of not necessary. It really is just like a money grab for cosmetics. I enjoy, and I will oftentimes get them because I like to, show that stuff off. But I find that there's a very limited audience to be able to show it off to. It's not like Dead by Daylight where you're like constantly showing off your cosmetics and matches that you're going into and things like that.
That's me showing off my cosmetics and matches, sir.
Diablo 4, you're sometimes grouped with people, but party content is not like super common, actually. So anyway, it was an interesting comment made recently by Rod Ferguson, the head of Diablo 4, talking about that Blizzard might be actually moving away from the Battle Pass system. You don't want to kind of run with this yet. We're not going to see it for Season 8, which, by the way, we're starting to get some of the details for Season 8, and it sounds like they're going to bring Belial back, which will be fun, and because he's a big baddie, and there's going to be a lot of boss fight implemented stuff that's going to be in. So that'll be very interesting to see. So, very cool stuff coming in Season 8. But as far as the Battle Pass goes, right now you usually have a 90-tier Battle Pass you work through over the season. There are free rewards, but most of them are premium. And in comments that were made at the 2025 DICE Summit, Rod Ferguson mentioned this Battle Pass as probably an antiquated system now, saying there's different ways to gamify and to give players more agency. So I think what I would say is watch this space. I think what we're going to be introducing some interesting things. Now, in related comments, not in the same breath here, but he's also spoken in recent times about Call of Duty's map battle passes, where you can kind of prioritize what it is you actually want to unlock within the system. It's not used in Call of Duty Black Ops 6, but based on the comments, some people wonder if, could this be something that we actually end up doing in Diablo 4? Now, again, nothing is confirmed for Season 8 yet, and I would assume it's probably not going to be, but maybe by the time the next expansion is out in 2026? Question mark? I don't know. There's a lot to infer here, but it is interesting to hear that Blizzard is considering going away from this Battle Pass system. Maybe it's not working for them, which I will admit, and I'm a big Diablo 4 fan. It's a lot to be asking your audience to buy these annual expansions. Okay, they're not doing one this year. Maybe every other year expansions, and do a $10 Battle Pass four times a year on top of that. Like, come on. Anyway. All right. Darsakra, you were texting me about this one before the show, and I was like, oh, this is...
I was.
Here we go.
I have other emotions.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I do have to give credit to one of my favorite DBD YouTubers, Mint Skull, for making a video on this that explains it very well. But YouTube is changing their mid-roll ad placement. And not necessarily for the better. Like, on paper, to the viewer, it sounds pretty good. You know, you can still manually place ad breaks, but they're now trying to determine with this automatic detection is if the placement is going to be intrusive upon the or interruptive on the experience, meaning that it's going to look for moments of silence to interject this. Now, they were like, you can have the auto ones in there, so where they'll do it for you. And they are looking for natural breakpoints. But the thing is that there are different creators out there who try to do, I like how he phrased it, the ADHD editing, where they talk fast, there's no space in between, you know, which honestly, I don't like. Because I like for people to breathe in between their words and speak at a pace that's understandable. I hate when people are just like, and we do this, and we do that, and we do this, and we do that. It drives me nuts. I like to be able to understand what I'm listening to. Going back to this, though, it still gets in the way of portraying a lot of information in a short amount of time if there is, if they're not, if they're forcing these ads in and then calling them interruptive. Like, you're going to have to program in moments of silence into your dialogue or your script to be able to accommodate when these ads are going to pop up, or you're going to lose revenue because they're going to remove the ads for being interruptive. And for people who live on YouTube, for people who make their money this way, you know, it's going to be really disruptive. It's going to take money out of people's pockets. Now, for people who deliver their stuff at a pace, usually for a different audience, or for, you know, maybe a more, what's the word I'm thinking of, like documentary or slower style, you know, for a different audience, that may not affect them. But there's a lot of people out there who their audience wants that fast pace, no break in flow of information. And this will completely shoot them in the wallet.
I just think these mid-roll ads, especially when, like, it's one thing if the user chooses it's, where to put them in.
It's for videos 8 minutes or longer.
Okay. I think it's one thing if you let the user or the creator kind of choose where to put this stuff. But I think when you force it on it and you're using these, you know, I hate to go back here, but AI, not quite ready for prime time, but we're going to use it anyway to serve up these ads, you know, and this whole thing, and you're not letting people choose where to put it in, then you're going to be asking yourself, why are more people using ad block on YouTube? Why are these ad block things consistently trying to block our ads on YouTube? Like, you know the answer to why, because you're putting in so many of these mid-roll ads in places that don't make sense that people are just going to find any way they can around it. And it's right now, at least on a computer, it's very easy to do ad blocking at YouTube. It's the devices, like, you know, this is probably why YouTube would rather that I watch videos on my Samsung TV or on my PlayStation 5, because I can't use ad blocks on those systems. So, anyway,
it's definitely there are pluses and minuses to this. And I mean, and right, Ron was absolutely right that some of that ad revenue goes to Vogue. We have content up there that's longer than 8 minutes that is subject to pre-roll ads.
Yeah.
And we give information pretty fast-paced, I like to think, for us.
Yeah. Sorry, just to echo what Bobby's saying, to correct the Lincoln Lee. No, we can't choose to not have ads on Vogue. What we do, we roll 2 minutes intentionally when there's no live content airing, so that it dumps the pre-rolls for, I think, 40 minutes. But once that's done, we are forced by Twitch to use pre-roll ads. But you'll notice, unlike a lot of other streamers on here, unlike a lot of it, and I'm not saying, you know, people got to have their money and earn their living and do that. We're hobbyist podcasters. I'm not dumping mid-roll ads during the show on you. I could, but we're not. That's just how we've chosen to do it. Could we make more money if we were to do some mid-roll ads? Probably, but honestly, it's not enough.
But that's not what we're there for.
And it's not enough to have that conversation. It's pennies. Pennies. And I'm not, I don't mean pennies every time I push the button. I mean pennies over the course of a month. It's not worth it.
Oh yeah, it's minor. Like, I mean, I know it's not the same thing, but I was just looking at like my Twitch ad revenue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know how much I made for a really solid month.
Mm.
$4.
Yep.
$4.
Oh yeah, we're not partner, and that's probably the key there. I didn't even realize partners could choose not to run ads. So it's interesting.
I don't care about being partner.
Yeah.
On YouTube.
Oh no, and even on Twitch.
Why would we want to?
I've kind of accepted on
that's
Twitch.
A lot of work.
And I've accepted on Twitch. It's probably not going to happen, and that's. I'm okay with it. Like, you know, this is a fun thing. This isn't my career. And I'm okay with that.
I mean, maybe I wouldn't mind being a Twitch partner someday, but I'm not like heartbroken that I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
I do what we do. We do this because we love doing this.
Mm-hmm.
This is, we have a Guinness World Record for doing something we fucking love.
Yeah.
Okay. Why, if we're happy, why push it?
It's funny. Lincoln Lee in chat says, why wouldn't you want to be partner? I get asked this question. We actually, Bobby and I used to get asked this question a lot at certain conferences, which is, why aren't you monetizing more? And it was one of those things where it was like, we don't want to. I think when you start to monetize, there's a certain element of you are buying a product from me, and therefore I feel an onus to deliver on said product. And some people would try to talk me out of that is that, no, you know, but again, I just took 2 weeks off because I wanted to go party with nerds in the Gulf of Mexico on a boat. Like, do you think that, like, if I was a partner, I probably wouldn't be able to do that. Because it would directly affect my well-being and all that stuff. So
it would start becoming a job at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's not that less viewers are better. I think that we have good quality viewers. We have, or listeners even. We've made so many friends this way.
Oh, yeah.
And I've gone out of state and had people invite me to DDR tournaments because they listened to the show. And we had a great time hanging out. It's a little... Yes, you're a quality viewer, Shadow. Shadow is one of my DBD friends and one of my mods. But I like it this way, you know? Yeah. I feel like we have more meaningful interactions rather than just a bunch of... strange conversation people, you know, I like to have the interaction. Yeah. That's the thing. And we have a good number of people that we can regularly interact with. And on top of that, we've got people all over the world who listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
So you may see small number for the Twitch viewing, but we have more people out there who just aren't able to come in at 6 o'clock p.m. on a Sunday night Pacific time because they are 10 hours ahead of us or it's tomorrow already somewhere. You know, it's just we're not doing this as a media production per se, like what you're saying, you're a media production person. We do this because it's a hobby and we love it and we've just refined our hobby over the last 22 years.
And also the Lincoln Lee says, okay, my bad. There's no my bad. It's fine. Nope. Like
people who don't understand,
we get this, asked this question a lot and we haven't talked about it in a while. It's like totally fine. And I realize it's a little weird because you hear so much in the media about, you know, could I tell, you know, if I were to open up the mailbag and tell you how many spam mails we get. Make money off your podcast. Monetize your podcast. Monetize your YouTube. Monetize this.
How about you bite my podcaster butt?
And I'm just like, money. I know it is a very weird thing to say in 2025, or that I'm coming from some weird, like, holier than thou kind of place. And I promise it's not. But it's like money really isn't everything sometimes.
Yeah, so, I think in this case it would kind of taint. I mean, it'd be nice, I think, to have a little bit, you know, like maybe get new equipment, but that's a different story. That's why I have my own channel.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I can pay for TwitchCon and buy new equipment, the end.
And I'm not, I'm not opposed to more viewers, but it is also a vicious cycle of to get partner, you have to have the viewers. To get the viewers, you have to have partner. And, you know, of course, we're going to try to promote. This is why I try to do things at different conventions. And, you know, we've done stuff locally. And, of course, we always say at the end of the show, tell a friend or two about the show. We, you know, try to do our social media things and, you know, try to get the words out different ways. But, you know, this market of video game podcasts is also so saturated at this point. You have to remember when we started doing this as a Live 365 show in 2002, and then especially when Apple iTunes rolled out podcasting in 2006, you know, being in the game then, there was so little competition. We had a ton of people listening to us at the time. But over time, now there's especially a lot of people that have more name recognition than, you know, little old Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki. And it's hard, and it's not my job.
Hey, no. We're in a video game or two, so we're happy.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I love those cameos. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they were very well done. But going back to it, it's not my job. I don't want it to be my job, because I'd hate it if it was my job.
Yeah. All right. I do want to keep things moving, though, and no, it was a good tangent. We need to talk about it. I do want to keep things moving, though, and get to a segment that we do here every week on the show and talk a little bit about the classic game of the week.
Yeah. And now it's time to travel back to a simpler time, where I'll dive into the vault and pull out a classic and tell you about it. It's time for the classic game of the week.
And Dark Sakura, what is the classic game of the week?
Well, remember, I'm doing a special thing this particular week.
Sorry, and some of the noise is getting through too. Sorry.
Every month, once a month, I have like a special theme for the year, and I do a special game. And this year's themes, as long as I can keep finding shit for it, are console games that became arcade games or were ported as an arcade game. And I have chosen Thunder Force AC. And you can all thank Dan for this one, my delightful spouse. It is a horizontal space shooter from Sega and Technosoft. Thunder Force 3 came out on the Sega Genesis, aka Mega Drive, everywhere else, and the game was so well received that they brought it out in the arcades under Thunder Force AC. It was brought out to Sega System C2 hardware, and it is almost graphically identical to the Mega Drive version. It has a few differences on there, you know, some upgrades here and there. It's pretty much a retool of Thunder Force 3. It borrows some enemies and stages from Thunder Force 2 and adds original content. And good luck finding the JAMA board, by the way. But you want to know the funny thing about this is that this was a Genesis port that went to arcade that was then reported to the Super Famicom or Super Nintendo as Thunder Spirits in 1992. And there is a Sega Saturn port of AC that is included on the Thunder Force Gold Pack 2, which I own a copy of. There's also a Switch port that came out May 2020 with the Sega Ages release. The Rhinek appears as one of the unlockable ships. And it has the Thunder Sword variant and the mass production model sticks. So you get some bonuses for the Sega Ages release. And the Thunder Force games are so good. Like, the first one, I don't think was very fun. Second one is like Thunder Force 1 with Thunder Force 2-ish. So, yeah, it was pretty interesting. And Lincoln Lee, don't worry about arguing. We argue all the time. But I would say that the Super Nintendo version of this, you can tell it's a port. It's definitely a little bit odd. But the music in it is, of course, fantastic, because Thunder Force music is just freaking amazing. I think that it's probably one of the best shooters out there. And if you can find it on any system, be it Genesis or find the arcade version, good luck finding a JAMA board for sale, though. I'm just going to say that they are pretty freaking rare now. But even the SNES one is really good. So go play it. It's worthwhile. If you find one in the wild in an arcade, please take a picture and tell me, because I would love to see it.
God, do you think any of them actually work anymore? That'd be wild.
No, I keep looking for one at California Extreme. I don't think I've seen one yet. Mm. I usually get distracted because I'll find a baby Pac-Man and go, oh my God, a baby Pac-Man.
Yeah, SG-100 Matt says, I've only seen it on MAME cabinets. Oh, yeah, I know exactly what Bobby's thinking. He's going to run to the Bobby Black Wolf Manor basement and pull it up. We mean like one of these actual machines out in the wild.
I want to see a real native.
I already see
Sega published. It's real. Bobby says it's real to me. Well, I mean, we've got it on our Ultracade, but, you know, and we actually do have we have the Genesis one. We have the Super Famicom one and we have the Saturn release. So set of first games, though, like 3 and up are just fucking good. There was Lightning Force as well, which is another Thunder Force port. But yeah, good games. Oh, Bobby went back and did Puriruda after I did that for Classic Game.
Oh, I know. Yeah, no,
talk
it's
about fucking weird ass game.
Yeah, good times. All right, let's move on. We just have a few more things to cover before we wrap up the show for tonight. But we want to get to some rapid fire news and talk about a few other headlines that are happening around the industry. Loki, you still there? we haven't heard from you in a minute. Oh, good. Just vibing.
He's just listening to us rant.
No, it's fine.
I've never played
that
mail went down and we don't have anything, so let's just forget about it.
that's fine. I actually scrubbed the mailbag earlier. It was full of spam and all that crap. So yeah. Anyway.
Sticky.
And I do want to point out for the live listeners, the Lincoln Lee had a comment in chat that said, this is a great show, by the way. Thank you. Sorry I argued so much. To which Jamie had the perfect response saying, we argue all the time. That's what we do. Like, it's just especially having worked together for 23 years. We argue all the time, and it's about having
family doesn't, right?
Yeah. It's about having different perspectives sometimes. And I realize, especially the AI thing we were talking about, it's a controversial issue, right? And it's a life changing for many people issue. And so therefore people are going to have passionate opinions about it. And I think that's why I tend to, on my opinion, you know, not to bring up the whole conversation again, but that's why I'm like, slow down, buckaroo. Cause this thing is moving way too fast, and that's essentially what my issues boil down to. But anyway, let's get back to games. Rapid fire news. Welcome to the show. Rapid fire news. Dark Saga. It's Loki. Sorry, I'm just.
Jeez, Rob, you go on vacation for 2 weeks and you forget how to podcast.
See that part?
And you wrote our show role.
Remember that part about arguing? Yeah. Okay, Loki. Loki.
We give each other shit all the time. Don't worry about it.
We have an announcement of a brand new Tony Hawk remaster game. So Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4 announced for July 11th. It's coming out on Xbox, PlayStation, Switch, and PC. And will also be on Game Pass day one because it is an Activision title. Very similar to 1 and 2 that they just remastered recently. Similar combination of like old stuff and new stuff thrown in there. So you're going to have all the classic levels and skaters, but also modern skaters and new levels, as well as the original soundtrack and new stuff as well. On top of that, they've got, 4K visual support, of course, cross-play, multiplayer, creation tools, new game plus, free skate, speedrun modes, and new tricks. And that Activision also confirmed that the original controls and gameplay found in the original Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 and 2 are back. So, it looks fun. I used to love playing the old Tony Hawk games. I didn't really play the last remaster, but this looks cool. And, of course, if you want to drop extra money on a digital deluxe edition, you get skins, Doom Slayer skins, and the hoverboard, and wireframe Tony Hawk, and skate decks and stuff. cool, I guess. Then we've got news, more Suikoden news. So they just did a Suikoden direct type thing for Suikoden Live. And
that was weird. That was like the day before the release of the 1 and 2 HD mix. And I was like, oh, are they gonna announce 3 HD? No.
No,
not yet.
No. But they did announce that there's a Suikoden Starleap mobile game coming out. They said with a new 108-star story set in the same world as the earlier series, no release date. It's going to be free to play on iOS and Android. And then they also talked about the animated, I guess it's a series, not really sure, but they're doing a full TV anime project to adapt Suikoden 2 as part of the Konami Animation, which I forgot was a thing.
I mean, cool if it's good, but, you know, yeah. Again, I'm cautiously optimistic. Emphasis on cautiously.
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Castlevania was good, so maybe.
Yeah, maybe. All right, now, Jamie, what do you have?
I forgot, because you disrupted my... I have Pac-Man. Bandai Namco is celebrating Pac-Man's 45th birthday. There are museum displays, live experiences, a cookbook with a, quote, maze of imaginative recipes. So, yeah, they're going all out. In their press release, they are saying that their theme is impact. So, I mean, I don't know what that means.
Oh, my God.
They're going to have
someone,
special...
Someone brainstormed in a meeting very hard for that one.
Right. But they're going to have a special display at the Museum of Pop Culture in Seattle running from April 30th to June 4th.
I love the Museum of Pop Culture. That's cool.
And a Pac-Man retrospective exhibition in Great Park Gallery in Irvine.
Oh,
so, yay.
45, nice. Though. 45?
I'm older.
I know. Me too. I didn't get a cookbook for my 45th birthday.
I can make the official OLR cookbook. Things you can make with waffles.
Well, I was like, what would even be in that? Double
waffles.
Triple bacon waffles.
And fried rice balls with cornflakes. Those were really fucking delicious, by the way.
Dark Tetsuya in chat says, I know my arcade has a bunch of new Pac-Man handhelds for the 45th. My arcade being the company that's been reproducing a lot of retro stuff. Interesting. I guess that makes sense. I feel like the Pac-Man re-release of games, I mean, we've been there, done that. Like, what Pac-Man don't we have at this point? We have all the Pac-Mans in the world. So, all right. Well, let's move on. I want to go ahead and travel around the world and check out some upcoming release dates. Loki, if you're good to go, why don't you talk about what's coming out in the U.S.?
A few things. So we have Centum on PC, Mac, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. Maliki Poison of the Past on PC and Nintendo Switch. Rise of Ronin on PC. Wanderstop on PC, PlayStation 5, and Xbox Series. We have Fate Reawakened on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. Metalbringer on PC and PlayStation 5. Beyond the Ice Palace 2 on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. Dungeons of Hinterberg on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. The Hungry Lamb traveling in the late Ming Dynasty on Nintendo Switch. This is a fun
sounds
title.
Sounds mighty historical.
Is it wrong to try to pick up Girls in a Dungeon: Full Land of Water and Light on PC and Nintendo Switch?
This is not the first. I've heard this game title before. This is not the first time this game has come out. It's got to be based on some fucking anime or something.
I don't know how to feel.
We have Kamitsu Baki City Regenerate on PC
Thank
and
you.
Nintendo
they,
Switch.
Chad is confirming it is based on an anime. I knew it had to be. It's unhinged enough that I'm like, no. This is a book on a shelf somewhere.
We have Macho on PC, Linux, and PlayStation 5. Mullet Mad Jack coming to Xbox on Xbox One and Xbox Series. On Your Tail on Nintendo Switch. And last but not least, WWE 2K25 on PC, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series. That's it.
All right, moving over to Japan and checking out what's coming out on the Nintendo Switch, we have Kami Tsubaki City Regenerate in a regular and special edition. The game that Loki was earlier referring to. Is it wrong to try to pick up girls in a dungeon? Familia Myth, Full End of Water and Light. Look, as much as I want to sit here and pass judgment on this, I was talking earlier in the show about wanting to fuck the fish man that's voiced by Garrus. So... You know,
I mean, what are they doing in the dungeon anyway? I mean, like, come on,
fucking.
Who's just hanging out in a dungeon? Hey, you know where I like to go on the weekends? Unwind the dungeon.
Wasn't that the plot of 50 Shades of Grey? Like the whole hype was like, I'm going to show you my dungeon. Well, are you ready?
Why am I thinking of the?
We're going to go to my dungeon.
It's kind of a dungeon with cannibals.
I thought there would be D&D in here. I am confused.
Well, there's definitely role play.
Well, I'm here. I brought my D20.
Where were we? Ah, yes. Other games coming out in Japan. We have Mika and the Witch's Mountain on the Switch and Ghost Pia Season 1 also on the Switch and Beyond the Ice Palace 2. All of those games coming out on March the 13th. Going over to the PlayStation 5, we have Beyond the Ice Palace 2 is also coming out there. And that's it. Those are your Japanese releases. How about Europe, Dark Sakura?
I'm trying to get to my freaking date because I lost my place. Okay, are we ready?
Yes. Ready.
So, God, there's a ton of shit coming out. So we'll just start at the start. Beyond the Ice Palace 2, PC, PlayStation, Xbox on the 10th of March. Craft, Fantasy Merchant Simulator for PC. Order 13 for PC on the 11th. Rise of the Ronin for PC. Oblin Party as well. Vanguard Exiles. Also on the 11th, Chernobyl Liquidators for PS5, Xboxes. We have Wanderstop for PC, PS5, The Phantom for PC, PS5 on the 12th, Expelled for PC, Switch, iOS. Also on the 12th, we have Fate Reawakened, PC, Switch, PlayStation, Xbox, Dungeons of Hinterberg for PlayStation, Midnight Murder Club for PC, On Your Tail for Switch, we're still on the 13th, by the way, The Hungry Lamb Traveling to the Late Ming Dynasty, Ringo's Roundup for PC and Switch, Mythic Realms for MetaQuest, also Path of Fury Episode 1 Tetsuo's Tower for Meta, Outlawed for PC, WWE 2K25, PC, PlayStation, Xbox, that's on the 14th, also MLB The Show 25 for Switch, PlayStation, Xbox, Fawn Town for PC, and Police Shootout for PS5.
Plenty to choose from overseas this week.
Da, 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 da.
Now chat is sharing all the weird shit that's like anime. So apparently, okay, I did not know this. SG100 Matt says there's an anime where a character gets reincarnated as a vending machine in a fantasy dungeon world. It's called Reborn as a Vending Machine. I Now Wander the Dungeon.
What?
I love it.
Clearly, I picked the wrong hobby. I should have written books. Like,
see, this is where AI comes in the play. Where it's like, hey, ChatGPT, write me just the most insane concept for an anime.
The only anime I am watching right now is Sakamoto Days, which is amazing. Loki, you should watch this. If you haven't watched it, you would like it.
Oh my gosh.
I still have to watch so many things.
I know. So, there's so many TV shows I have to watch.
But it's so good. It's about a retired hitman, and everyone decides suddenly that they want to kill him, kind of John Wickish, without, you know, dog issues. But these other people end up hanging out with him and working for him, and it's absolutely hilarious. I love it. I love it, love it, love it.
The one TV show I watched just ended this week, so I need new and that would be The Traitors, featuring Smash Brothers of reality TV shows.
We're in the process of rewatching The Good Place.
Oh, I love that's one of my favorite shows ever. I've heard that show has literally come up in conversation like 3 times this week. It's just, I don't know, just very random for a show that got off the air years ago. I love that show. Anyway, Phil of Nine says Brittany was my fave on The Traitors. Okay, I'm not gonna lie. I was rooting for Danielle. That's right. I said it. I was rooting for her because I loved her on Big Brother 3 back in the day. And even though she was messy, 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 like I feel like the Traitors, there are two distinct audiences watching the Traitors. People that love reality shows and like Bravo celebrities and that type of thing, those people hated Danielle because they didn't understand that some people will literally do anything to win the games and win the money and all this shit. And then there's the people that watch like the Survivor and Big Brothers and all that stuff like me, that's like, she's just playing the game and sometimes it ain't nice, but when it's over, it's over. Like, it's just a game. So whatever. But anyway, I'm not going to spoil, but what I will say, the best thing that came from that TV show, Gabby Windy from the Bachelor. And I would never thought I would like anybody from Bachelor Nation because that, you want to talk about reality show. Like, I know some of y'all judge me for my love of certain reality shows, but even I sit here and go, but the Bachelor is where I draw the fucking line. Like, those shows are trash. But so I never thought I would like Gabby Windy. But she is so fucking brilliant. Brilliant. And she has her own podcast. You know, I never talk about other podcasts on the show, but if you ever listen to Long Winded with Gabby Windy, I recommend it. It's literally 45 minutes of Jennifer Coolidge, but 20 years younger, just sitting there talking shit into a microphone. Do you remember? I'm about to give all of you Orange Lounge Radio that were here in 2002, the biggest fucking throwback. Do you remember when we used to cover DDR tournaments? Jamie,
I remember Matt. When we had them.
Do you remember when we need to take a quick meal break or a potty break? We need like 30 minutes. Can somebody give the microphone to Jahi and let him fill 30 minutes?
Oh, fuck. I miss Jahi.
What ever happened to that guy? He was so fucking cool.
I'll have to ask Wendell.
I'd love to know. But anyway, so imagine now instead of Jahi, it's Jennifer Coolidge. That's long-winded. It's incredible. Riveting.
I remember
riveting stuff.
I just now remember Jahi's experience with tequila at Jessica's place.
You know, she has a nice cameo in the latest Minecraft movie trailer too.
Oh, Jennifer Coolidge?
Yeah.
Oh, I love her. I love her too. This is about Gabby Windy, but yes, I love Jennifer Coolidge as well. They get compared a lot. In fact, I think even on the reunion, she was asked, like, you get compared to Jennifer Coolidge a lot. What do you think of that comparison? And she actually said, well, in this game, I did feel like these gays, they're trying to murder me. Which is a good reference. That's her humor. She's so funny. Anyway, all right. Anyway, I'm going to start a podcast about how I'm a big fan of hers. But for now, we've got one more news story for you about video games. So, Loki.
All right. Well, tangentially about video games, but it's certainly going to affect us if, you know, they end up going public. But Discord, it's rumored that Discord may be in talks to go public. Basically, you know, there's no confirmed anything about it, but apparently the thought is that they're going to try to, you know, raise money that way by going publicly or being publicly traded, which means that they are going to turn the crap, unfortunately. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to if that happens.
So it's a good little callback to the beginning of the show. Here's going to be that word in shitification again, because this is what's going to happen to Discord. When they go public, you better be prepared for the in shitification of this app, because this is when it's going to be, please watch this ad before joining video chat, or, oh, in this news channel that goes updates, like that, here's like the latest crypto stuff. So it's, yeah, I know. And everything you hate about those other apps is going to come to Discord. When I think people have to remember, why did we all join Discord in the first place? Because it's free. Now, I realize free things don't print money, but Discord seems to be doing okay for itself so far off Nitro subscriptions.
They have their Nitro things and stuff like that. But even
which Blue Sky is modeling its payment model after Discord Nitro. And so it just has me worried. Like, well, when's the inshittification of Blue Sky going to happen? Although with Blue Sky being built on App Protocol, I would argue it's going to be a lot harder, but I don't want to cross that bridge for a good long time. So,
I mean, like, look at, like, talking about like old things becoming new again. Was it just this week Dig announced that they're coming back? Like, oh, okay.
Well, is that the same thing like Acclaim? Like, it's just the name. Or what's his Kevin Rose? Him too.
At this point, I'm going back to LiveJournal. Bye.
It's still the same people, but they're coming back. It's one of the co-founders of Reddit, not Spez, and Kevin Rose.
Serena Williams' husband, Alex. What's his name?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I don't remember what his name is, but yeah. Okay. We'll see. I mean, I just.
Here's the thing, and yeah, I know. DJ Romance says, "What ads? If Discord goes public, then they will be out to make money for their shareholders. And how do you think they will be able to print more money for their shareholders with ads? It's coming. It's coming. Hopefully not. Hopefully this is all just hysteria. But unfortunately, and you know, and SG100 Matt says going public is the precursor to looking for someone to buy you. Sometimes hasn't there been offers to buy Discord before? Didn't Microsoft try to buy them?" Several years ago, I'm almost positive that was the thing. Microsoft tried to buy Discord some time ago, and Discord fended it off. Yeah,
they're apparently valued at $15 billion, according to the Financial Times.
Especially,
so I don't know.
But Discord, you have to remember, Discord blew the fuck up during the pandemic. Like, it's not just a video game thing. Like, lots of people use Discord.
Yeah,
yeah. Casual gaming, paper gaming, tabletop gaming, all of it.
Like, I'm still trying to get together a D&D group or something.
Mm. Good times. All right, let's go to the listener roundtable where we usually would take emails, but we don't have any emails tonight over at participate@orangeloungeradio.com. And I think for time, we're just going to go ahead and skip through this tonight. But in the future, we'll take calls in our green room as well over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Sorry, Rama, I'm going to move to wrap up the show, but I look forward to speaking to you in a future week. I see you in the green room right now. But yeah, we're gonna wrap up for now. So I will go over to Loki and ask if there's any last minute stories.
I do not have any last minute stories.
Okay. Good deal.
Oh my God. Gaga on SNL.
I didn't see it. I haven't. Was it funny?
Oh, no, I didn't. I'm talking about her performance.
Oh, her new
Abracadabra.
Her new album is fire. That's
for
sure.
It totally is. But her performance was flawless.
And by the way, Bobby wanted to send this along, Dar Soccer. It's Thunder Force running on his cab.
It's so tiny on your phone. I can do that.
Okay. All right. And also you can check the, OLR Discord. He put it there, or the Orange Lounge Radio Room in the Discord.
The whatever thing. Stuff.
I saw that too. Dark Tetsuya says there's new Tetris Grandmaster 4 footage. I saw that announced trailer just went out. So I definitely want to see that as well, for sure.
Did you see the one for Death Stranding 2?
No, didn't they do a big thing earlier today?
Yeah, I just posted it in Discord.
I watched a little bit off and on. It's I didn't listen to the audio because, you know, we're live. But I just peered through it and it looks interesting.
Character looks like Solid Snake.
Here's the thing.
Legally distinct Solid Snake.
I just expect everything that comes out of Hideo Kojima's factory is going to be very abstract in all the previews. It always is. But then, you know, by the time Death Stranding actually released, it was a little artsy fartsy, but I liked it a lot. It was very poignant considering that it came out right before COVID. Like, that game actually fucking hit hard because of everything that happened in 2020. So
it had Pharah.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see.
It wasn't Pharah, was it?
No, it had.
Wait,
it had the Bionic Woman was in it. Played the
Lindsay
president,
Wagner.
Right?
Why yeah, was Lindsay... I saying? Yeah, my practical namesake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All
Lindsay
right,
Wagner's awesome.
With that, we're gonna wrap up and get on out of here for the night. Thank you, as always, for listening to our show and participating with us tonight. If you enjoyed what you heard here, tell a friend or two about the show. Help us spread the word because we are the show where every gamer has a voice, but we need more voices to put out on air. A nice 5-star review on a site like Apple Podcasts or YouTube or Spotify or wherever you found this show, it goes an awful long way and we really appreciate it. We'll be back next week. No more breaks. We'll be back next week, hopefully, unless there's an emergency, but we'll be back next week to talk about the latest and greatest in gaming and everything that's happened in the last week. Until then, Dark Soccer, I know live tonight you're gonna go do your thing. You playing DBD tonight?
Yeah, I am.
You are?
A little bit.
Okay, that'll be fun.
I messaged Shay and friends Yeah, I want to play with my friends tonight, so we'll do it. Great. And my final thought for this show is think and resist.
All right. Have a good one. We'll see you next time.
Later, Tater.
Bye. Loki, that takes us to you and your final thought for tonight.
Oh, I forgot to mention it when we were talking about the PlayStation rentals, but I was going to make the joke, you know, hey, if money can't buy happiness, I guess I'll have to rent it.
That's a good outlook on life, Loki. All right. And my final thought tonight is, I don't know. I'm looking forward already to the 2026 Star Trek cruise and going up. So I'll be gone again next year. But I'm looking forward to it very much. And yeah, it's my little happy place. And wherever your happy place is, I hope you are able to spend some time in it this week. So we'll see you in 7 days. We'll do it all over again. Have a great night, everybody. Bye.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for our live show, tune in to VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio nor VOG Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.